I would like to call to order the afternoon session of the Goleta City Council. Madam Clerk, actually, before we do the roll call, why don't we do the Pledge of Allegiance, if you'll join me, please?
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you would.
Councilmember Perotti, here. Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Vallejo.
Here.
Mayor Farr.
Here. If the Madam Clerk is not holding out on me, I don't see that we have anybody here who wishes to speak to an issue here that's not on the agenda. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's no speaker slips.
All right. So, Ms. Green, do we have any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
We have no amendments or adjustments today.
All right. And now we go to what you might term the voluminous consent calendar. Let me just warn you, this may go on for half an hour.
Item A1, acceptance of the May 2016 check register. A2, approval of Hollister Avenue high-intensity activated crosswalk project plans and specifications and award contracts for the Hollister Avenue high-intensity activated crosswalk and Hollister Avenue crosswalk enhancements at Orange Avenue projects. A3, amendment number one to professional design services agreement with Van Atta Associates, Inc. for Hollister Kellogg Park. A4, animal control services for fiscal year 2016-17. A5, award of a professional services agreement with Layton Consulting, Inc. for proposed Fire Station 10 geotechnical services. A6, public works professional services contract for fiscal year 2016-2017. A7, professional services agreement with Wildan Engineering for professional engineering services. A8, professional services agreement for planning services between the City of Goleta and Janice Hubble. A9, amendment to professional services agreement for planning services between the City of Goleta and Stephanie Diaz. A10, South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety Memorandum of Understanding for fiscal year 2016-17. A11, professional services agreement for temporary staffing services between the City of Goleta and Recon Environmental, Inc. A12, agreement for grant funds for paratransit services with Easy Live Transportation, Inc.
All right, thank you. Is there a council member who wishes to pull any of the consent items?
A10.
Okay. We're going to pull A10, if you would. All right, is there a move?
Move approval of the rest of the consent calendar.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, it's unanimous for the consent calendar with the exception of A10. Would you read that again, Madam Clerk, A10, and then we'll discuss that.
A10, South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety Memorandum of Understanding for fiscal year 2016-17.
All right, if you would, Mr. Aceves, would you like to discuss this?
Yeah, actually, I pulled it because my intention is to vote against the MOU. This is a program that started, it's been in existence for about 6 years. It was originally the South Coast Task Force on Youth Gangs. And the program is totally supported by public funds. There's no outside monies. There's about $150,000 a year, of which $22,000 comes from the City of Goleta. The program has met all its goals as they originally planned, and all they've done now is change the name to South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, and they have not changed the goals at all, just changed the name. So I pulled it for the purposes of voting against it. The $22,800, I'd rather give that money to the Boys and Girls Club since they serve more in one day than this program serves our Goleta residents in 1 year. So with that. If somebody wants to move forward with it, that's fine.
Does anybody wish to comment on A10? Mr. Bennett.
Yeah, I too sit on the committee with Councilmember Esteves, and I respectfully disagree with my colleague on this. I think it's very important for us now that we've reached the stage where statistically we've shown that the gang problem in both Goleta and in Santa Barbara has been reduced considerably. There's a lot of different reasons for that, but certainly one of the reasons is because of the excellent coordination of all of the various groups that had participated before but had never been coordinated and never had the opportunity to interact and what have you. So that's been a real blessing. It's a program that other communities are looking to adapt to, and in not the least of which, of course, is in North County. They're looking at it very closely to see if it might meet their needs for their issues that they're trying to deal with. And there's no question the program has transitioned. That's due to its success. But in my opinion, it's not the time to abandon the program because of that success. It's the time to go into a different phase and work towards the ultimate goal of zero members in the gang culture. Those numbers have been reduced dramatically, but we're still not where we'd like to be. So in any case, I will be supporting this, and I think it's a good program for all the communities that are participating in it. And so I want to support it.
Ms. Perotti.
I sit on the task force, and I respectfully disagree that we should stop funding or contributing or participating in this at this point, because right now more than ever they're focusing on not only intervention but prevention. And so we need to get these youth that are at high risk or at risk of being incarcerated into the gang system. And even though the numbers are going down, this is no time to be pulling out of supporting this very worthy task force group that work together quite well, and they're all doing a really great job. So I can't support that.
All right, Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Yeah, thank you. When you offer to send money to the Boys and Girls Club, as Mayor Farr will probably tease me, I'm always going to be a fan of that. I'm a big fan of theirs. But I also think that preventive medicine is an excellent idea as opposed to waiting till it's a problem again. And I believe last time you guys were here that you were talking about switching gears and changes you were making. And I think you even said you're going to reach out to the boys, or probably already have at this point reached out to the Boys and Girls Club. Okay, great. So while I'm always in favor of funding the Boys and Girls Club, I do think this program's important, and I certainly don't want to wait until they come back to us and say the gang problem's back that we start to fund it again. It's only going to cost us more money and cost us more kids going down the wrong path in advance. So I will support sending this funding over there.
All right. So it seems to be the consensus of
And I totally understood that. My comments on the record. Again, this isn't a program against gangs. It's against youth violence. The last time the program was, the goal was to reduce gang involvement. So there's a whole different mission. If they'd come back with a goal, it would make sense to me. So I just wanted my comments on the record, and I knew exactly where the vote was going.
Okay.
All right. So we have that on the record. Ms. City Manager, Ms. Green, do we need a vote on this?
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
4-1. Okay. All right. So we have done the consent calendar. Now I believe it's back to our Madam Clerk, if you would, Liana.
Item B1, general municipal election to be held in the city on November 8th, 2016.
All right. Deborah Lopez, if you would like to tell us about what this is all about on B1.
Well, good afternoon, Mayor, members of the council. The city of Goleta will be holding a general municipal election on Tuesday, November 8th, 2016, for the election of two council members for the full term of 4 years. The candidate filing period for the two council seats will be July 18th through August 12th. However, the candidate filing period may be extended to August 17th for persons other than the incumbents should the incumbent elect not to file. Also, in July 2015, council directed staff to prepare a ballot question for the November 2016 general municipal election, to ask the electorate whether to have the mayor of Goleta be a directly elected position and whether the mayoral term should be 2 years or 4 years. Through this presentation, you will hear more detailed information by our city attorney, Tim Giles. The California Election Code requires that city council adopt the resolutions provided as attachments 1, 2, and 3 that are placed in this report if you are to place a measure on the ballot. City staff recommends that the city council adopt the required resolutions concerning the upcoming November 8th general municipal election to allow the proposed measures, if council directs, to be placed on the ballot. City Council partial analysis. Also, if council directs that the proposed measure be placed on the ballot and in accordance with California Election Code Section 9280, the governing body can direct the city elections official to transmit a copy of the measure to the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis of the measure, showing the effect of the measure on existing law and the operation of the measure. The impartial analysis is required not to exceed 500 words. Staff recommends that the city clerk be directed to forward a copy of that measure to the city attorney to prepare for the preparation of an impartial analysis. Under the election code, a copy of the city attorney's impartial analysis will be included in the sample ballot materials provided to each voter in the city prior to election. The first day that the city clerk's office could receive the city attorney's impartial analysis is July 26, 2016, and the last day would be August 4, 2016. There are also opportunities for written ballot arguments. The city attorney will be covering this part. The election code provides that upon authorization by the city council, an argument prepared and signed by the city council or by one or more of the council members shall be given first priority. But again, that's something that the city council will, the city attorney will cover, so I'll go ahead and leave that for him. The first day that the city clerk's office will receive typewritten arguments in favor or against the measure is July 26th, and the last day will be August 4th. There are also opportunity for rebuttal arguments. Back in 2012, the city council, at the November election, the city council adopted a resolution 12-43. That set priorities for filing rebuttal arguments for city measures submitted at the municipal election. This priority remains in effect, although council may choose to repeal it if they wish to. When an argument in favor and an argument against a measure have been selected to be printed on the ballot pamphlet, the election officials shall send a copy of the argument in favor of the measure to the authors of the argument against, and vice versa. The first day the city clerk's office will receive typewritten rebuttal arguments by authors of the direct arguments for and against the measure is August 5th, and the last day is August 15th. There will be a public examination period. That's going to be for the city attorney's impartial analysis, the ballot measure arguments and rebuttals filed with the city clerk's office, and that's a 10-day period. That would start August 16th, and it would conclude August 26th. The fiscal impacts of this measure and the two seats were based on a quote from the registered the county registered voters, and they estimated the first contest on the ballot would be about $1.50 per registered voter, and each additional contest would be 60 cents per registered voter, plus the direct cost of printing the pages in the sample ballot. There are approximately 15,867 registered voters in the city of Goleta. So based on that, the estimate provided was $54,900, and it has been allocated in the 16-17 budget. I'll turn it over to the city attorney.
Mayor, members of the council, about a year ago, you asked us to prepare the opportunity for the electorate to weigh in on the question of whether or not they want to be in charge of selecting who is going to be the mayor in upcoming elections. Currently, as you know, all five council members are elected to a at-large council seat, and the selection of the mayor and mayor pro tem is a left to the discretion of the council, and the practice has been to rotate that each year. The government code allows general law cities to submit to the electorate the question of whether or not they want to be the ones in charge of choosing who is going to serve as the mayor. And it also further gives the electorate then the right to choose, if they do have a directly elected mayor, whether that term for mayor would be for 2 years or for 4 years. We prepared this measure consistent with that statutory law and the direction that was previously provided by the City Council. What would happen with this is that there is no real change in the role or function of the mayor. The mayor would continue to function in the same way that they function now. They would be a City Council member. They would vote on all members. They would not have a veto or a supermajority or any of those kinds of changes. If you wanted to change the role of the mayor, that would be something that would be require the city to move into a charter, which is a much more involved process we touched on briefly at the time that council directed to move forward with this opportunity. The mayor would continue to function in some administrative roles and helping to make sure that the agenda items are properly prepared, would serve in ceremonial functions, ribbon cuttings, and things of that nature, and would chair and preside at the city council meetings, just like the mayor does now. The only distinction would be that the mayor would be selected by the electorate. The city council would still be in charge then of selecting the mayor pro tem, which would you would be able to rotate as you do now, and that person would be able to fill in when the mayor is absent, just like they do now. There would be very little change other than who selects the mayor and what the term of the mayor would be. The opportunity that we have before you now is if you are still inclined, as you were a year ago, to submit this question to the electorate. We have prepared this so that it can move forward. We would recommend that you direct the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis. We think that there's a number of questions that the public will want to know, and we want to, in as succinctly as possible manner, put together that kind of a statement. Such that they can know what this measure is, and it would appear in the voter's pamphlet that they receive from the county, so they would have it right there when they are making up their mind whether or not this is something to pursue. Separate and beyond that, when we talked about a year ago, the council's general comments, there was no vote, but the general comments at that time were, this is an item we want to just submit to the electorate and see which way they want to move forward on this. The sense at that time wasn't that there was a strong desire to advocate either for or against this approach. If that was a correct assessment from staff's perspective, and if council does not want to take a position either advocating for or against this, there's no need for the council to take up the question on the written ballot arguments. That would be necessary if the council does want to take a position advocating for the measure and urging the public to support adopting the directly elected. It would give then the council the opportunity to designate either the full council or some portion of the council to write that measure on behalf of the council and to have that appear in preferential position in the ballot pamphlet that is put out by the county. So if it is the council's desire to advocate on this, you would want to do that. As the city clerk mentioned, you already have in place procedures that deal with how rebuttals will be handled. You don't need to take any action with regard to that unless you wish to change what you have. Attached to the staff report is what you have previously adopted and is still valid at this point in time. With that, I'm available for any questions that you might have and would be willing to assist council in any way we can.
All right. Does council have any questions of Ms. Lopez or Mr. Giles? Yeah, Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just wondering, in your impartial analysis that you will be doing, will you be actually saying similar to what you're saying today? So it's an educational process about, I just want the public to be able to have the information that's needed and what this means to either have an elected mayor or not. And will that be in your impartial analysis?
Absolutely. That is exactly the goal of the impartial analysis. Hopefully I'm more effective at that than I am speaking on it before you now. It'll be a written argument, so we'll be able to spend a lot of time. What we do in the impartial analysis is in as educational a manner as possible, try and make sure the public understands both what the current system is and what the system would be if there was a change. What changes, what doesn't change, you know, and look at those two. State limits us to 500 words, so we get very precise in that. But the understanding is this is for the voting public. The voting public that doesn't watch these meetings isn't terribly engaged in all of the minutia of how city government functions, but they do care, and they want to know how their city government is set up. And so we want to be able to prepare it so that they can understand it without having any extraneous information or knowledge about how the city government works currently.
Okay, thank you for that, because that was my concern, is that thinking long term, that would the public, would our residents really get this information somewhere else? With the lack of, I mean, we have newspaper, but you know, not everybody gets the news press, and not everybody does online papers. So I think it's critical that that it needs to be written in such a way that is educational to the public. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Valeo.
Thank you, Mayor. So two quick questions. It looks like by statute we have to say, we have to leave it up to the electorate between 2 and 4 years as well?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And I only ask that because for me the continuity is the important part, and 2 years is better than one, but 4 would be better. But if that's what we have to do, that's fine. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
Two points on that. One that I should have covered and I didn't. If the electorate passes this measure and does select the directly elected, that would take place then with the election in 2018. At that point in time, there would be a position for the office of mayor and two city council positions on that ballot. With regard to the 2 year versus 4 year, that is something that if the council were to desire to argue in favor of that one way or the other, that is something that you can do, and that is something that we have provided in the resolutions that are before you. So if you do desire to do that, you would just need to designate who you want to write those arguments on your behalf. Staff would be glad to assist in any way that we can. That would then appear on the ballot, and the public would have that education. In answer to Councilmember Perotti's question in terms of education, it will be a neutral education in the city attorney's impartial analysis. By definition, impartial, not advocating for or against. If there's a desire that the public understands some of the pros and cons of some of these that may make it preferable to select one or the other, it would be appropriate to have that done in a council ballot argument. If the council does not desire to do that, we would ask then that you adopt the resolution, not in addressing that, but still addressing the city attorney's impartial analysis.
Okay, well, I would be inclined to emphasize, I have a preference for 4 years. I don't know if the rest of the council feels the same way, but maybe we could figure that out as we go forward here. But I did have one more question, and I think I know the answer, but this position isn't paid any more than the city council. I just, because I know the public's going to ask that, and
yes,
we would put that in the information, right?
Yes, we will make sure that we emphasize the fact that it will function in the same way that a city council member functions at this point in time, and talk in terms of how the mayor currently doesn't receive any additional pay. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges from an educational perspective is that the public, not being aware of the nuances, may look to our neighbors to the south and see that they're under a different form of government where they have different roles and a different way of approaching things. So we do want to be clear that this would not follow that model. That model follows the fact that the city of Santa Barbara has adopted a charter, and within that charter they can set their own rules for how those offices function.
Okay. Yeah, that would be important, I think, too. Thank you.
What about the villa in Puerto Vallarta? Does that go to the mayor?
Yeah, no, that's no.
No.
That's still left to the council.
All right. Are there any other questions of Mr. Giles or Ms. Lopez? And if not, let's deliberate on this. If you folks have an opinion, why don't you sally forth? Yeah?
I'll be happy to go forward.
Please, Councilmember Bennett.
I'm very much in favor of having the people decide if they wish to elect the mayor as opposed to having it circulated amongst ourselves. I think that's a fair question. As you may know, 6 out of the 8 cities in this county, they do elect their mayors as opposed to having them appointed. Ourselves and Carpinteria are the 2 cities that appoint the mayor. So that's just a statistic that I thought I would throw out there. But I think it's important that we've been incorporated long enough now for 14 years that it's time for the public to weigh in on that. I know I've had a number of constituents ask me why we don't elect the mayor, and so I've done my best to give that explanation. And so I think it's worthy that they can weigh in on this one way or another. As far as the term of office, I too would agree with Councilmember Vallejo. I think a 4-year term is better because the minute you put in a 2-year term, that individual will most likely be spending a lot of time raising money as opposed to dealing with the issues here at the city, and that part concerns me greatly. It's one of the ongoing challenges with 2-year elections. It seems like the election cycle never ends. So I would be very much in favor of 4 years, and I might add, our attorney can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is a more recent meddling with local government by the state legislature. Up until just a few years ago, the provision was for a 4-year term like everything else, but someone in Sacramento decided that they knew better and they liked it better, and so they put up the 2-year provision mandating that be put forth. And I just consider that to be unfortunate. It would have been nice if it had been just left alone and have a 4-year term, because all other provisions, unless you're a charter city, are 4-year terms. So to me, that just makes much more sense, especially from a learning standpoint. If someone were elected and hadn't served on council before, and that's always a possibility, then you would have 4 years worth of time to bring yourself up to speed, and it takes at least that long in any governmental function to bring yourself up to speed. It's a fascinating process, but one that I would suggest for most everyone is takes far longer than 2 years to become familiar and comfortable with how local government operates. So in any case, those are my 2 comments or 2 positions on the 2 issues, and I'm hoping that we can support this and go forward.
All right. Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you. Well, originally I was the one that was not in support of it going to, I like the way it's being handled now. It gives us each an opportunity to see what it feels like to be a mayor, and then we worked together very well after and as a team. I agree that 1 year isn't long enough, because having done it for 1 year, I think I did not really understand and really understand the whole process until close to the end of the first year. So if it's your first time at mayor, it goes by really fast. And but I will be supporting it at this point. I think we should put it out to the residents if they would like to have an elected mayor, as long as they understand that nothing really changes other than they make the decision of who will be the mayor, and it's 2 years or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So I will support it.
Councilmember Aceves, would you like to comment on this?
I do agree that the public should weigh in on it. Like Councilmember Bennett said, we're only 1 of 2 left. I do like the idea of 4 years. I think about what's going on in Lompoc right now, where the current mayor has only served 1 year and, 4 months, and already he's in a race for re-election. And it is a short period of time. Those of us served as mayor, we come in with a lot of goals and ambitions and find out our time's run out. And so trying to get something going longer would take more than just the 2 years. I know that we've budgeted money and I know we're in deliberations, but I need to ask staff this one question. I like the idea of doing 4 years. If we were to move forward with 4 years, would that take a separate ballot argument? And do we have sufficient monies in the budget to pay for a separate ballot argument?
So in the staff report here, the question is if the citizens are going to vote for a directly elect mayor. The second question is going to be, should it be 2 years, The third question is, should it be 4 years?
So we just eliminate the 2 years?
I don't think we're allowed to.
No,
we're not allowed to.
We have to have two or four, and it's up to the citizens.
So do we have enough money to do a separate argument?
The arguments aren't what's really costing. It's all estimated out. If you do an argument in favor or against, or if we have additional arguments come in for or against, that's kind of estimated out in our price right here, the $54.9.
Okay. And if we went with four, that would take a separate motion to?
We don't have the opportunity to call a two-year or four-year. The question that's out right now is if we want to put the measure on the ballot to directly elect the mayor. The question to the public is going to be to directly elect the mayor, yes or no? And will it be for 2 years or will it be for 4 years? That's how the statute tells us.
I understand that point, but if the council majority is saying we want 4 years, how do we communicate that?
I think that if I understand the council member's question, if the council wished to submit arguments on this question, would it need to submit arguments in favor of the measure requesting 4 years and also a separate argument against the two-year measure? And I'm not sure exactly how the county will set these up. Generally, as we've seen them, the three questions will appear as a single measure. And so the council can authorize the council to, or council members to advocate for that position. We'll incorporate that into the resolution, and then we will work with you and the county to make sure that those arguments are brought forward in the ballot pamphlet.
Mayor Pro Tem Valeo.
Well, I think I skipped to deliberations a little early, but as I already said, I'm in favor of letting the people decide to. Quite frankly, I think they already think we do this. Based on the questions I've gotten as Mayor Pro Tem, I think a lot of people don't understand how we get to be mayor anyway, and they're probably kind of assuming we're electing that position and just haven't seen it. I know I get it all the time. What is Mayor Pro Tem? Who's mayor? How does that? I think the public's a little confused by it anyway, so we might as well make it clearer. And I want to emphasize, I think 4 years is better. I think you're really creating a lame duck position if you have a mayor for 2 years who everyone realizes is going to be fighting that fight again if they want to stay in that seat in 2 years. So they're barely going to understand the job before they're running for re-election. So.
All right. Anybody else want to make a further comment on that? Okay, before we vote on it, as I tell you, if I were to write what was the best thing about being mayor, I think it would be having what I think to be the last word on this. And I hate to play the contrarian, but I see it a little differently. I haven't been on the council as long as most of these people here, but I think it's a very useful thing both for the personal growth of the council member to have the opportunity to play mayor. I think it emphasizes a different list of priorities, if you will, to have a revolving mayorship. And I think it strengthens us as a council that everybody has had that experience. I think we understand it better. We understand exactly what you can or can't do as mayor and some of the protocol that's involved in that. So I might say I don't see the problem we're solving here. I'm not sure that there's much advantage of having a mayor. And I do like the shared opportunity responsibility as it rotates through the council. So anyway, I won't be supporting it. But it's obvious we have a consensus. I assume we're voting on this, huh?
We need to make a motion.
Yeah. Okay. Please.
Oh, okay. adopt resolution number 16, next in order, entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, calling and giving notice of the holding of a general municipal election to be held on Tuesday, November 8, 2016, for the election of certain officers as required by the provisions of the law of the State of California relating to general law cities, and for the submission to the voters questions relating to directly elected mayor and the term of office. Also adopt resolution 16 next in order entitled a resolution to the City Council of the City of Goleta, California requesting the Board of Supervisors of the County of Santa Barbara to consolidate a general municipal election to be held on November 8, 2016, with a statewide general election to be held on that date pursuant to Section 10403 of the Elections Code. And finally, adopt Resolution Number 16, next in order, entitled a Resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, setting priorities for filing written arguments regarding a city measure submitted at the November 8, 2016 general municipal election related to directly electing the mayor and the term of office, and directing the city clerk to submit the council measure to the city attorney for the preparation of an impartial analysis.
Mayor, before you take up the action on this item, with regard to the third resolution, we need to identify those council members who would be authorized to sign the ballot argument, which we can do one of two ways. You can take the motion as is for the first two resolutions, take that out of the way, and get those off the table. But then if you note in the attached resolution, there's blanks filled in, so we're looking for authorization. Which of the council members do you want to authorize to sign the ballot argument that is in the motion?
All right, Councilmember Aceves, you want to modify the motion?
Well, can we, if four of us are in favor of it, shouldn't all four of us sign it, and then shouldn't that be part of the resolution?
You can do that. We just need that direction.
Unless somebody doesn't want to be on it.
We're signing our name to an argument. Sure. I'm confused.
Sure.
Help
potentially
me.
To write.
What is being done at this point in time is that when the ballot arguments come in, and remember, members of the public, groups in the public, would have an opportunity to also submit arguments either in favor or against this measure. But because you're the city council, you get the opportunity to have priority, to have your arguments listed first. What this resolution does is say, yes, we want the city's arguments to be listed first, and these are the people who are authorized to speak either in favor or against the measure. It does not commit any council member to take that action, to sign it. It just authorizes them. We would work with the council to come up with that language so that they can make that determination. At times, it can be up to all five council members. Generally, staff will assist in the preparation of that to avoid Brown Act issues with regard to that. Although, what you're doing at this point in time, in a notice public meeting, is authorizing this argument to go forward. So, any discussions are pursuant to that are pursuant to the authorization that you're doing at this point in time.
If after the language is developed and a council member does not agree with that language, they don't have to put their name to it. Or are you saying you will agree to anything if you put your name to it now?
What you said first.
Okay.
This authorizes but does not require the council members to sign the arguments in favor.
Right. Thank you.
I'd be willing to put my name to it too, then. I think all four of us probably.
Okay, by implication then, is my name automatically on writing the opposition to this point of view?
Not automatically, but if you would like to submit, it would be up to the council to include that under the list of those who are authorized to submit an argument against the measure.
Okay, well, if you folks would authorize me to do that, I may or may not do it, but I'm not supporting the motion as it stands, so. You want to rework it a little?
I'll rework it only in that, and I'll offer up, if it. The way I'm hearing it, it's going to be a 4-1 vote. So I would ask that the four of us that are voting in the affirmative, that I'm assuming at the moment, that those four be allowed to sign the ballot measure.
If we agree with the language, that's written.
If you don't agree with the language, you can step out. Yeah. I appreciate your dissension on it, but I don't know if we want to authorize a separate ballot measure to voice one council member's dissension.
Is that the only option on that?
Just to clarify, it would not be authorizing a separate ballot measure. It would be authorizing a separate argument. It would authorize the argument so that the issues, the positions that would mitigate against adopting the measure could be brought forward. It would just allow both viewpoints to be put forward. It does not, it will reflect not the direction of the full council, but only those who choose to sign the arguments either in favor or against. And all you're doing at this point in time is authorizing whether or not you want to allow a city council member to sign on as an author to those arguments one way or the other, and if they do so, for those arguments to have a priority position.
And Mayor, if I can, if the staff, if council does move forward and goes ahead and puts their names on the arguments in favor or proposed, staff has outlined a process in the staff report, big page 4, that says that council could authorize a member or members of the council to prepare arguments in favor of the measure. If a decision is made to submit an argument in favor or against, staff suggests that a subcommittee be appointed to draft the argument. And then once that is completed, that the staff be directed to come back at a later date to the city council. And then staff would be available to provide any assistance to that subcommittee. But suggests that the council, not staff, should be charged with drafting any arguments in opposition or in favor. And then if council wish to create that subcommittee, then we can go ahead and work that out.
Yeah, somehow I missed the thrust of that. So if there is opposition, is then a subcommittee formed to develop that opposition, or is that the council member's responsibility?
I think that the point that the city clerk was mentioning was along the lines of what I was mentioning in terms of the appearance of Brown Act of four city council members getting together to craft an argument outside of a public meeting. This is not city business, but it still might look untoward. So a recommendation to avoid that would be allow the four, assuming you have four that are authorized to sign a measure, to have two of those to be charged with crafting the arguments that then is submitted to the four as to whether or not they choose to sign on to. Again, it's a cautionary direction, and it is something that you would not necessarily need to take action on, but you certainly could do that in the context of this motion. It would be outside or be beyond the resolution.
Okay, we're getting a little deep into this, but if I write something, am I allowed to write something by myself without a subcommittee in opposition to that, assuming at the sufferance of council I'm permitted to say anything about it?
Assuming the council authorizes you to sign an argument as a council member, you don't need a subcommittee, you don't need to talk to anybody else, you would be able to do that if you're authorized. If you're not authorized by the council, you would be able to do that as an individual, not as a council member. You would still be able to put that argument forward, and that would be at your discretion at whatever cost might be with regard to that, because you would be acting as an individual and you would have your full rights as a resident to do those.
All right, thank you.
So I just want to be clear. So we will have a subcommittee, that I understand this. So we will determine two, say out of the four, that would go and have a subcommittee. They come back to council with the argument?
That's an option for council.
Well, I first of all, I can't put my name to anything I haven't read yet. So I would hope it would come back to us.
Well, you will have an opportunity certainly to read and review it before you're asked to sign and approve it. The mechanism that would happen with, you know, you certainly have a great deal of flexibility in how that is accomplished.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, yeah, Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, if you might. I don't have a problem with having a minority position in this and being able to put that forward as authorized by council. So let's do staff recommendation A and B as one motion, and we can come back to motion C, because I see that may go a little, have a couple different, you know, votes on that, and which is okay, I mean, from my point of view, but certainly adopt A and B, and then let's come back to C. And I think that's what our attorney was kind of suggesting we do in the first place.
Yeah, that is an option that would clean things up and that allow us to focus on the one point, yes.
All right. Councilmember Aceves, you want to?
I'll amend my motion to include only A and B.
Second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. 4-1, it passes. Okay, now should we wrestle with item C on this now?
Let Councilman Bennett have a jump at that.
All right.
Yeah, I would recommend that we adopt resolution number 16 next in order, entitled Resolution City Council, City of Goleta, California, setting priorities for filing written arguments regarding a city measure submitted at the November 8, 2016 general municipal election relating to directly elected mayor and the term of office, and directing the city clerk to submit the council measure to the city attorney for the preparation of an impartial analysis and allow for affirmative and opposition statements to be included in the election material.
Did you need our names too?
That would be preferable. That would fill in the blanks that's in the resolution.
We can take a roll call vote, which would satisfy that, I think.
We're looking as to which council members are authorized to sign as to which argument. That was the preparation. That was the recommendation that the election consultant provided to the city clerk. I think that the motion as stated is satisfactory. We would modify the proposed resolution to just eliminate the blanks with the names. We have the understanding that you're authorizing the positions and we can work with that.
Okay.
Second.
I appreciated your amendment to that motion, by the way.
It's democracy.
Okay, all those in favor of resolution C say aye.
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 Opposed? I guess we call that one unanimous. Well, that's it, huh? I guess we flogged that. Thank you, Ms. Lopez. Appreciate the help on that. And
closed session.
It looks like we have an opportunity for the public to address closed session matters. I don't see anybody out there.
There's no speakers.
All right. City Attorney Giles, do you...
Yes, there's a need for the City Council to meet in closed session this afternoon, a conference with their legal counsel on anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4 with respect to the potential initiation of two matters of litigation. No reportable action is anticipated from this session.
All right. We're now adjourned to closed session. We'll see you at 6 o'clock.
Let's name the day.
Tis the pain as I stand here and remember that once our hearts were one, and every day was spring to me till you left and took away the sun. Now the days are lonely, the song of love is still. They say that I'll forget you, but I say I never will. And it hurts with such a pain to be alone and lonely in the rain. And it hurts with such a pain to be alone and lonely in the rain. Sure be sure, constant is the rain. Sure be sure, endless is the pain. As I stand here and remember that once our hearts were one, and every day was spring to me till you left and took away the sun. Now the days are lonely, the song of love is still. They say that I'll forget you, but I say I never will. And it hurts with such a pain to be alone and lonely in the rain. And it hurts with such a pain to be alone and lonely in the rain. Sure be sure, constant is the rain. Sure be sure, endless is the pain. You be, are you be. Zimara. Lluvia, lluvia, llueve Zimara. Strangers, and we were sweethearts for so long. Lovers, until you let your love go wrong. Kiss me, then give your heart to someone new. Darling, this is our last adieu.
To order the evening session of the Goleta City Council. And we've got some help here, I want to say, on the Pledge of Allegiance coming up now. So all of those of you who are comfortable coming up to lead us all in the Pledge of Allegiance, please come up here.
Come on.
Three. We can do more than three. Here's six. That's good.
Oh, we got to stand up.
Any others? I don't want this to be the thing that you'll regret not doing when you get home tonight.
Come on, don't worry.
Yeah, now we're getting there. How about that teeny little one there on the end? No. Okay, are we ready? Here's how we do it. I'm going to roll over this way, and then I'm going to say, ready, begin. And then you guys just leap right on it, okay? Okay. Okay, ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, you guys did very well with that. All right, maybe we have the roll call.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Pretend Vallejo?
Here.
Mayor Farr?
Here. All right, Mr. Attorney Tim Giles, do you have a report from closed session?
Yes, the City Council met in closed session a couple of times today. We had a special meeting at 11:30, and then after your afternoon session, had two additional items for discussion. There was no reportable action taken in those proceedings.
All right, thank you. Now, would I be correct to assume there's nobody to speak on the public forum?
I have no speaker slips, Mayor.
All right. Okay. The public forum is for people who want to speak about something that is not on the agenda. So. All right, now we do something. Well, actually, I've got a question to ask of Ms. Green. Amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
We have no amendments or adjustments to the agenda tonight.
Great, thank you. And now comes the fun part. We've got certificates for all of you guys, the little ones, and you could strain your back picking up the stack. It's so big. Now, we're sending out our envoy here from the city council. This guy's the biggest booster you guys have. He loves what you're doing. We all love what you're doing, but he speaks of you all the time and well. So all you guys who are getting a certificate, please come forward. And Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo will give you a certificate.
All right, you guys come on out here. All right, it's karaoke night. Who's going to sing first? All right, so you're each, and I think we're probably missing a few kids, you're each going to get a certificate to take with you. What I think we'll do is I'll read just one of them. I'm not going to read all 25, and then I'll read all the names I have here, too. And then we'd like Ashlyn or Michael to say something about why this is so important. I know you've explained it to me before, but this is great. Sorry, I should be talking into the mic. And then if they have a spokesman that would like to speak, I think some of the council people have a question, so if anybody's brave enough to answer a question or two, it's not a quiz, it's just they're curious. We'll do that too, okay?
Great.
All right, so I'm really happy that I get to be the one to do this. And like I said, you're all, look at how big this stack is, jeez, it's heavy. You're all gonna get one of those. But I'm gonna read the top one, and then just so you know what it says, and then we'll pass those out. So the City of Goleta Certificate of Recognition. The City Council of the City of Goleta, California, presents this certificate of recognition, acknowledging all of you for your outstanding attendance at the United Boys and Girls Club as one of the original Gold Club members. The City Council of the City of Goleta proudly honors each one of you. So I was a club kid down in Carpinteria, don't hold that against me, a long time ago. So I know how much fun the club is. I know how important it is. And I'm really glad you guys keep going because that's very important. You have great people looking out for you, and you guys make it fun for everybody else. So we have quite a few. I don't think you're all here, but I'm going to read all your names because this is on Channel 19. So, and we replay this show because we don't have a lot of content. So feel free to go to Channel 19. You'll see yourselves, your TV stars. There's a camera. There's a camera back here. And it's on the web, too, for parents. If you want to go to our website, if you go to meetings, you'll see a download of this. And you're not shy at all, are you? Good for you.
Tony, perhaps you could have them wave their hand.
Everybody turn around and face that one, and let's all wave. Hold on. Oh, let's take a picture first. And then we'll, because she's anxious to take a picture. Everybody crowd in. Come on, Darth Vader. Don't. Oh, go. Come up here. Get up here. I want to make sure we see you. They want to see you, not me. Trust me. I'll be in the back. Yeah. All right. Everybody smile and say Boys Club. Boys and Girls Club. Sorry. Boys and Girls Club.
Does somebody want to hold a certificate just so you can see?
That's a great idea. Whoever's in front. Or you hold your hand up. Let's open it up, though, okay? Let them see it. And you're all going to get one. Don't worry. So. All right. One more time. Now we'll say Boys and Girls Club again. Boys and Girls Club. Thank you. All right, so let's. There are 25, I think.
25 total. We've got a handful of them here.
All right. So we have, hopefully I say these right, Gabriel Aguilar, Luis Daniel Arriguen, Caleb Autry, Ariana Escobar, De Jesus Escobar, sorry, Luz Viviana De Jesus Escobar, Jonathan Delgadillo, Christina Gonzalez, Adriana Guadarrama, I hope I said that right, I apologize. Fernando, oh, there's three of them too. Fernando Jose Guadarrama, am I close? Yes? Did I get it? All right. Samantha Juliana Guadarrama, Eddie Guerrera. Okay, I thought you were correcting me. Were you correcting me? Yeah? I'll try and get it better next time. I don't blame you. Sofia Jimenez, Chad Maceta, Christian Mendoza, Gabriel Nahara, Daniel Pimentel, Juan Pimentel, I'm seeing a trend, Perla Pimentel, I'm guessing related, Gabriel Romero, Diego Rubio, Andrea Sanchez, Fatima Sanchez, Lourdes Sanchez, Oswaldo Sanchez, and then John, oh, he's got a long name, let's read it all, John A. Lucas Yoclis Perez, I think. That's all of you. First round of applause for all these guys. Good job, you too. All right. Why don't we let Michael or Ashlyn speak a little bit why they keep track of membership and the Gold Club membership, and then I know at least Councilwoman Perotti has at least one question for the kids, so hopefully you guys did your homework. Okay.
First of all, thank you for doing this. This is a great recognition for all the kids, and I want to thank each and every one of you and the parents that are in the crowd for coming out and supporting your kids and trusting the Boys and Girls Club with your children every day. The remarkable feat that these kids have accomplished is that what we found out, we have Boys and Girls Clubs all over the country, and the studies have shown that a child that goes to a Boys and Girls Club 105 times in a calendar year is twice as likely to graduate high school in time, lead a much healthier lifestyle as well. And there's several other things that go along with it, all positive things. So we set in motion a program that we wanted to encourage kids to come to the Boys and Girls Club at least 105 times in a calendar year. And again, our membership year starts January 1. So these children have already come to the Boys and Girls Club. We're a little past the middle of June. And these kids have come to the Boys and Girls Club over 105 times already this year. So we have another six and a half months to go. No doubt in my mind that you guys are going to, we're going to have to create a Club 225 or something. I don't know what we're going to do. But we're 365. 365 eventually. But Ashlyn has to have a day off, so we won't do that. But I do want to say that this happens because of the great people that support the Boys and Girls Club in the city. Thank you for so much of your support and what you do. And you allow us to do what we do, and you have great professionals like Ashlyn working in the club every single day with these children. That's what makes them want to come back every single day. It isn't about the building or a specific program. It's about the people that are working there, and that's what makes all the difference in the world. And when you have people like Ashlyn Strawley running your club, if I had five Ashlyns, I could rule the world. I really believe that. So, Ashlyn, thank you for what you're doing. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Questions?
Don't be scared of us. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate each and one of you. Good job. I'm really proud of all that you guys have done. I'm just wondering if someone would like to answer the question. I have a question. Whoever feels like they'd want to answer it. What keeps you going all this time? What do you like the best about the Boys and Girls Club? Can anybody answer that one? Is it Ashlyn?
What is it?
Somebody must know. What do you like?
What do you love about the club? I don't know. The staff, playing the games. What is it? Homework?
You guys go on field trips?
Yeah.
Oh, we have one over here that would like to answer.
No?
Mm. Well,
how about seeing your friends?
Mm.
No.
Mia, do you want to share? Yeah?
The staff. Yeah. Yeah, you're pretty lucky. You have a great staff. Well, thank you.
Well, there's no question that something wonderful is going on over there, you know, and Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo is constantly reminding us what a terrific job you guys are doing, and we're delighted to have you here. We've expressed the desire to have more young people here. We have a lot of old gaffers around here, starting with me. But I thought Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo, it may be contagious, so don't come forward. Anyway, thanks. You guys are wonderful, and keep up the good work, and we'll have to think about something else for 200, huh?
Yeah. Can give you a key to the city at that point.
I do have one question.
Okay, please.
Because when I grew up, I went to the East Side Boys Club. And if you look around the community, a lot of adults, you know, got their start at the Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. So how many of you know that your parents went to the Boys and Girls Club? Mm. Any of you? One over here?
She raised her hand.
Two? There you go. So it's really an important organization, and if you look at throughout the community, how many people got their start in the Boys and Girls Club? And look, you got two of us up here on the dais, so it works.
You guys are really lucky to have such great people like Ashlyn and Michael and all the staff work with you, but you guys make it fun for them because you're good kids and come down there and show a lot of enthusiasm. So it works both ways. You guys keep it up.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks, you guys. Thank you very much for coming.
That's more fun with them up there anyway. What the heck?
My card's on.
Do you really?
That's funny.
Okay, well, that was the only fun we're going to have tonight, I have to say. Probably. I'm sorry, I'm fighting something here. Yes, please. Madam Clerk, if you would, introduce our staff members.
Item D1, fiscal year 2016-17 solid waste collection rates.
Okay, Everett King is going to be adding to us, and we have Rosemary Gagliani as well. Thank you guys for coming and walking us through this.
All right. Good evening, Mayor Farr, members of the council. I'm Everett King, the city's environmental services coordinator. The item before you tonight are the fiscal year 16-17 solid waste collection rates that will go into effect July 1st. Under the franchise agreement with Marburg Industries, rates are adjusted annually and take into account changes in collection and disposal costs. The agreement specifies a methodology for calculating those changes and allows the hauler to charge residential and commercial customers up to the maximum rate cap that results from those calculations. There were no new services requested by the hauler for fiscal year 16-17. So, for example, last year, the hauler requested the addition of commercial green waste cart services. But again, this year, there are no new services requested by the hauler. So changes in collection costs, and these are the costs that pay for the haulers' trucks, depreciation, maintenance, drivers, insurance, workmen's compensation, whatnot, are accounted for through the application of the Consumer Price Index. The CPI is calculated on the February to February basis using the Los Angeles Riverside Orange County CPI as published by the U.S. Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics. So the change in the CPI from February 2015 to February 2016 was 2.41%. Changes in disposal costs reflect the changes in the gate or tip fee that's charged by the County of Santa Barbara to accept waste at the Tahigas landfill. The disposal component adjustment is based on the percentage change in the tipping fee between the 12-month averages of the two previous calendar years. The change between the average tipping fee in 2014 and 2015 was 1.22%. So the maximum rate cap is calculated by applying weighted adjustment percentages to the collection and disposal costs and are multiplied by the percentage changes in the CPI and the Tahigas refuse tipping fee. These are then added to arrive at an overall maximum rate cap. In this year, the case is that it's 2.01%. Marburg Industries is proposed or will be establishing the actual rates at the maximum rates for fiscal year 2016-17. So what that means is that the rates across the board, residential commercial rates, will all be adjusted upwards by 2.01%. That includes some extra costs that are in there, as like padlock rentals or overweight collection charges and the like. They're all adjusted to the same. Excuse me. So again, the 2.01% increase is applied across the residential and commercial collection rates. And just to give you some examples, the residential collection rates for a 64-gallon cart, and keep in mind that there are 32, 64, and 96-gallon cart levels of service for residences, will increase by 58 cents a month. And a 3-yard commercial bin that's collected 3 times per week will increase overall by $11.24. And again, since each of these rates are starting at a different point, the dollar amount is varies because of the percent increase that's applied. So this is a pretty modest increase to the collection rates. It's actually less than the overall CPI, if you recall them, which was 2.41%. We're looking at a 2.01% increase to the rates. So that concludes my brief presentation to the council on the rates. I'm happy to take any questions that you might have about the rates and how they're calculated.
Any council members have a question? No? Okay. Well, apparently, your presentation hit every note we wanted to hear.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, a comment here, though, from our council member next door, Council Member Perotti.
I just want to say that it's I have heard no complaints about Marburg service. They've done excellent work. I think it's been a great relationship. It's a very modest increase, and we're not really approving this. It's not up to us to say yes or no. It's just a presentation that.
It's a presentation, but there's also a public hearing component, oh. So the public has the opportunity to comment on it. So
okay.
When council's comments are concluded, then we would ask that the mayor open the public hearing and follow our typical procedure.
Well, thank you for the report, and I'm pleased with the service that. I guess my question would be, when are we due for to review the contract? Is it annually, or was it for 5 years or 6 years? I can't remember.
No, Council Member Perotti, members of the council, the franchise agreement is for an 8-year term.
Oh, an 8-year.
That would end on midnight, June 30th of 2019. Okay. Now, there is a provision in there whereby the hauler can request an extension for up to 2 years. Oh. They need to provide a minimum of 6 months' notice prior to the expiration, so that would be December 30th of 2017, that they are seeking an extension. Then the city would have 120 days to respond to that request, either accepting or rejecting it. If the city fails to respond, then it's deemed to be acceptable, and then the franchise agreement would be extended to June 30th of 2021.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Well, if there are no further comments now, I'll open the public hearing. I've got this agenda right. Okay, the public hearing on the rate increase for Marburg is open to public comment if anybody wishes to make such a comment. No? Then I guess I'll just close the public hearing. Well, actually, I guess we're not quite ready for that, but we had council questions already. Staff responses, there were no questions, so you have no more answers.
I would just like to briefly respond to Council Member Perotti's observation that the services that has been provided has been excellent. And I calculated rates for Santa Barbara and Ventura County prior to my coming here to Ventura, and every year after there were rate increases, I would be inundated with emails and phone calls about, what are you doing? The rates are going up. And so I'd have to explain to people why that was, and a lot of times they misunderstood how much the rates were actually going up, so I'd have to kind of walk them through it. I've had literally no complaints, other than when we first implemented the new collection system, there were some conflicts between mail delivery and the street sweeping schedule. We had to kind of sort those out. Mm-hmm. But other than that, after about 2 or 3 months, we have not received any complaints, which I think is unusual, even with the excellent services provided. Usually there's some people out there that just like to complain about things, but I haven't heard from them, so.
All right, that's very good. Now the question is, are there any more comments from council before I close the hearing? No? Okay. The hearing is now closed. Now we have some deliberation schedule. Is that for another type of?
That's for a type of item where you would be voting, and in this
okay,
case,
we're not voting now,
a receive so. And file.
Okay. So we have done our open public hearing. And now let's move on, Madam Clerk. We have another one. Thanks to folks for your contribution. That's the way to have it, right? In 5 minutes and out.
Okay. Item E1, award of contract to Historic Resources Group for Historic Preservation Program Development.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Members. I'm Jennifer Carmen, Planning Director. I'm just here to introduce Lisa Prossy, who will be giving the presentation this evening.
All right, thank you. Lisa?
Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. I'm pleased to bring this contract before you tonight to begin work on creating a long-lasting historic preservation program for the city. While it's tempting to just jump in and prepare an ordinance, we really need to create a solid foundation in order to have a legally defensible preservation ordinance to last into the future. The foundation of this ordinance needs to be built on some baseline tasks, which include the creation of a historic context statement and to have a survey done of the community. Once those tasks are completed, then we can move on to an ordinance. And we are wanting to build upon the existing information that has been gathered over the years and on the policies that we have within the general plan. Once we complete those baseline tasks, then we can work on having an ordinance developed that is Goleta-focused and Goleta-centric. The previous, as an example, the previous survey work that was done by the county, for the county, from a county perspective. We're a city. We should be focusing from the Goleta perspective and doing it and involving our local community members who have an interest and an expertise in historic preservation. So some people might be asking, why do we need to do this work? Well, if someone, one of those properties that's listed, one of those privately owned properties that is listed in the general plan, if someone wanted to come in and make modifications to the building, make an addition, do adaptive reuse, or even, I hate to say it, demolition, our city regulations really are silent as to what the process would be and what criteria we would use to evaluate a proposal such as that on historic resource. We do have general plan policies, and we can use CEQA process to the extent, but that's pretty limited in scope, and it would leave us kind of vulnerable in terms of defending whatever decision we were to make on something like that. With an ordinance that's created on a firm foundation of with substantiation and justification, we will then have the tools necessary to preserve the legacy of the structures within our community. So going into a little detail, some of the baseline, that we have basically see there's two phases for the baseline work to be done. The first is creating a context statement, and that will be basically the basis for the development of our regulations and our process. The context statement would provide an overview of the overarching forces and the people who have shaped our land use patterns and our built environment. We also wanted to include an archaeological context statement in recognition of the Chumash history here within our city. The context statement will also establish the parameters of what the city would determine to be historically significant from both a prehistoric, historic, and an architectural standpoint. If we were to skip this task, then the city would not have the needed justification and justification as to why we would designate a property and why we didn't, or why we didn't designate a property and or why we created the regulations that we did. And I will say that we are planning on doing the, creating the context statement with public input and proceeding with getting community sentiment into what that would mean from a, for, you know, as a city. Let's see. The second part of the baseline task would actually be doing a city-wide field survey, surveying every property within the city to identify buildings, landscaping, and other historic features. Could be trees. We know we have some significant trees that are historic, that people, people have strong sentiments regarding. And we would want those included as well to be identified. At the conclusion of this phase of the project, we would have historic survey data for each property, including photographs of important structures or character-defining features for the structures. Again, if we were to skip this task, we wouldn't have a complete survey of historical or architectural or structures of architectural merit. And there could be some resources that are misidentified or even not identified. These surveys would also provide support if and when someone were to question a designation, such as why was it designated or why wasn't it designated. At the end of phase one and phase two, we would have the adequate information from which we could create Goleta-centric thresholds and criteria to go forward. So in addition to the benefits that we would have from a historic preservation standpoint, there are some other benefits that can come basically from an Environmental Quality Act perspective. The CEQA's default position right now is that anything that is over 50 years old is deemed historic. Most of our housing stock, for example, about 75 to 80% of it or more was built prior to 1970 and would be considered historic based on CEQA. So, however, if we have the background work and we establish criteria, which would come through both the context statement and the ordinance, we would have a threshold point of actually defining what the city would consider historic as opposed to just relying on the default from CEQA. Because, you know, instead of, we could actually identify what is truly historic as opposed to just being old or older. In addition, having the survey sheets and the documentation that goes with that for each structure would be invaluable to residents, designers, architects, the DRB staff, if and when modifications to structures are proposed. Coming from a jurisdiction where we had these, I will tell you they were incredibly useful. Once we have work done on phase one and phase two, then we can jump into doing the ordinance. And the ordinance would create the, or actually document and establish what the criteria would be for us to designate a property, what a designation means, what the process is to designate a property, establish regulations associated with the designation, set up an appeal process, and then even establish some enforcement mechanisms. You can also include, if we wanted, how to delist a property under certain circumstances. Based on the contract that we have before us, that this portion of the program is actually one of the least expensive parts, that most of the work is done in phase one and phase two, where the activities occur. So I will also say, well, also part of the contract that's proposed is to have an education component to help us, once we get an ordinance adopted, how do we educate the community and coming up with tools to encourage preservation. Moving on to the contract, we did issue an RFP, and based on the RFPs we got and the analysis, we have as staff are recommending using Historic Resources Group out of Pasadena to assist us with this work. Historic Resources Group, or HRG, is one of the leading firms in the state in historic preservation. All of HRG staff meets or exceeds the Secretary of Interior's professional qualifications in this field. In addition to HRG, Mr. John Foster of Greenwood and Associates is part of the team to document the importance of the Shumash history and presence in our area. HRG was selected based on qualifications, their scope of work, the inclusion of the Native American component, and their strong outreach efforts. The other part that was very enticing to staff is that they're going to be providing the survey sheets in a GIS database format, or compatible format. Why we find that exciting is that there'll be a very easy link when we get our permit system up and running, that we will have already have that data ready to go to be inputted. So for those reasons, we are recommending going with HRG. The one other part of this project that finance part is that we are requesting an additional allocation of $50,000 for contract staff assistance to help us in the various tasks that we envision needing to be done, but primarily in the outreach effort. We have learned from the zoning ordinance that we have underestimated how much time and effort and cost associated with the outreach effort. So, and we just want to be prepared for that and have the resources available to move forward in a timely manner. So with that, staff is recommending that the council approve and authorize the city manager to execute the agreement for professional services with HRG as outlined in the staff report, and to approve the additional allocation as outlined in the staff report. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there questions of council? I'll start with Council Member Aceves.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the report. It's almost 10 years I've been waiting for this. But we understand that this dovetails into our zoning ordinance and makes it compatible with our general plan. So my first question is has to do, of course, with money. You said allocation of additional $50,000, but the motion or the request is actually $135 plus $50. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I was going to say, do it for $50,000. That's pretty dang good.
I wish.
So you talked about delisting. So I assume then that is going to be a review of the list that is contained in the general plan, currently contained in the general plan, to see if those are still in existence. And obviously, we changed the general plan to make it reflective of what's on site.
When I was mentioning delisting, it would be just setting up if we wanted, if we put property on a list, then we probably need a process to take a property off the list. I wasn't referring to anything specific in the general plan presently.
Okay, but we are, or the consultant would be looking at what's listed in the general plan.
The consultant would be looking at all material that has been produced, the general plan and anything that we do have from the county that is dated. It would all be part of the basis of the beginning of their research.
Okay. And you mentioned the experience of the zoning ordinance. Where do you see the touch points for community participation in this process?
Definitely with the contact statement, probably a couple, many times with the contact statement, and definitely during the ordinance preparation. Not so much sure after the survey work, because that's just, you know, documenting what's on each property to a certain degree. But we can, that can evolve as we see fit, as the process moves forward. But those, I would definitely at the contact statement and at the ordinance preparation, definitely is where we envision public input.
And we do recognize that we already have a significant interest in the community in participating in this ordinance. And because of that, we did bring forward that idea that we would have extra outreach other than what we've already estimated. That's why we had requested that additional money. It's not so much, it's an allocation, not an appropriation, because we do have those funds in our budget now, but we just need them moved to the correct line item.
Okay, and then we'd have the additional public hearing availability in bringing it before the ordinance committee.
Correct.
And that could be a preliminary and final for referral back to city council.
Yes. Correct, very similar to what we're doing with zoning. Okay.
Now, not contained in this report, but just on the top of your head, once we get this completed and we have an adopted preservation ordinance, is staff looking at creating an historic landmarks commission, which is similar to many cities, or incorporating this in the duties assigned to the planning commission?
That's something that would be forthcoming out of the work that is developed, and that's definitely something that both the Planning Commission and City Council can decide as through the deliberations.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem, did you want a word?
I did.
Yes. Okay, if
Sorry.
You would.
I guess doing this doesn't really tell you if I want a word or not, right? I should be more specific, sorry. So at the beginning you mentioned we would be, you know, the county did its own kind of perspective for the area as far as coming up with historical landmarks, and no, this isn't going to be something where I bash the county. I'm just wondering, where do you think the difference between what would be between what the county did and what we're going to do? Is it just purely based on only the history of Goleta, the city, inside the city? How is that going to be so much different?
Well, I think the county, you know, the county is a much greater area, mm-hmm. bigger area, and I think we can focus more on looking at the individual buildings. I also think we could look, it looks to me from the list I've seen, it's mostly historic structures. We could also look at architecture, if there's some buildings that have some architectural merit. Mm-hmm. And we can rely also, I know the county, that there are people in the community that might have other perspectives of what they might feel is the historic building compared to the list that was generated in, what, the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also, time has passed. Mm-hmm. So some buildings that may not have been historic when that list was created may now be.
We've made them historic with just time. At this
yeah.
point. Okay. Okay. No, that's good. I just want to kind of understand that. I'm not disputing that. So we're going to have a lot of public input, and that would include for the survey period where we're trying to identify properties, we would just be opening it up to allow the public to suggest areas that we may not think of. Is that correct? Or not that that would put it on the list, but get their input.
The consultant is proposing to survey the entire city, not just the buildings mm-hmm. on the list in the general plan, the 40-some-odd
right.
structures and other features,
mm-hmm.
but the entire city. And yes, if the community has specific buildings that they want particular attention paid to, we would welcome that input.
Okay, good. You mentioned there's an appeal process. Would that be an appeal to get your property off the list if you happen to own one, and also to appeal in case they want to do something to a property and they're declined? I mean, what exactly are they allowed to appeal? Let's put it that way.
Well, that would be something that we would work out through the ordinance.
Okay.
In my past experience, it was people being put on a list
right.
that they wanted to appeal to not be on a list.
But we'd put something in the ordinance to allow them to
right.
at least question it.
Right.
Okay. Is there a mechanism in place as we go through this process to prevent people from coming through at the last? I'm thinking there's a house near my house that's, I think, one of the original ranch houses for that area. And so if I own that property and I was thinking of making changes, I might rush through to get them done now because I know you might make it a historical landmark. And I don't know that this house is. I'm just as an example. Is there, what can we do in the interim between starting this survey where we might signal to people that, hey, we may make you a historical landmark, and actually making it a historical landmark so that they can't do something that wouldn't be in the best interest of the city? Historic, you know what I'm saying.
Well, right now, if someone came in with a building that was clearly a historic structure that was dated in the era of one of the first buildings that may have been in Goleta, mm-hmm. CEQA would come into play here.
Right.
So that's where the 50-year threshold is. So we do have some regulatory
okay.
benefit in that regard, but that lends to the it's historic because we think it's historic aspect,
yeah.
and that's partly why we want to do the inventory
sure.
and have the
yeah.
criteria, because depending on where everything falls out, it may be a historic that we don't want touched or a historic that go ahead and do something
okay.
and maintain this part of it.
Okay.
And that's what comes out of the results of the field survey, the context statement, and then the development of the ordinance.
Okay. And one last question, then. What do we think the timeline on this is? Did you knew that was coming? Because you're laughing.
Yeah. Well, a lot has to do with how we integrate this with the zoning ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
The consultant has come up with a kind of a generous timeline because we don't really, because we want to be sensitive to not getting too far ahead of the zoning ordinance. I'm thinking probably somewhere between 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And it really depends on how much public input we get, how robust we, that happens to be.
Now, this won't necessarily impact the zoning ordinance as far as reorganization. We do have a chapter section already identified for it. It will remain blank if the zoning ordinance is ahead of this project, and then it gets put in, and any tweaks that are needed will be done.
Good. Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A lot of my questions have already been answered by asked and answered by Councilmember Aceves and Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo. But I will ask the question about the group, Historical Preservation Program. Are they willing? I mean, are they okay with working with the community, the experts that we have in our community, all along? I mean, oh. from phase one on, I think for me it's critical for the success of this ordinance to have that happen.
Oh, most definitely.
So they're on board
oh, yes.
with that. They know we have some
yes.
experts in our
yes.
community and are so willing to help and,
yes.
and be part of this.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess that was my only question. Thank you.
If I had a dime for every time I've heard Councilmember Perotti mention the historic ordinance here, We could all be partying by now, I guess. Councilmember Bennett, did you want to say a word or two? No?
All my questions are certainly been asked and answered, and I think that the staff report's pretty self-explanatory.
All right, very good. That's always a good sign, isn't it? Okay, well, I really didn't have, I think you have answered my questions as well, except the idea of acquisition. If there is something we thought was very historically important to the city, is it anticipated that the city may want to acquire it and perhaps restore it to its former glory?
Well, purchasing of land would be a council determination. I mean, purchasing of any sort of piece of property, whether historic or not, that would be up to the council.
So you're saying it's out of your hands and into our hands?
Well, the ordinance would certainly have some guidance as to how things may be restored or how they should be evaluated and who should review them once it's developed. But the acquisition of them would be purely lying in the council's domain.
All right. If I remember Walker Tompkins' book right, there is that winery at Patterson, I think it is. Is this on your radar? Mr. Bennett seems to be excuse me, aware of it. It was built in 1820. It's the oldest building in the valley here.
But it's outside the city.
It is outside the city. However, that's my next question. Now, there are a lot of things that are outside the city, including the Goleta Cemetery is not in the city of Goleta. What does that tell you about our boundary? But in any event, is that a decision for us to decide to make if in the future we want to buy something like this winery, even though it's not in the city?
I see our city attorney grabbing his mic.
If you would, Mr. Giles.
You would have the opportunity to enter into negotiations and purchase that property. A couple of distinctions to draw out. Your power of eminent domain would not exist outside of your jurisdiction. Also, your tax exemption for property only applies to property within your jurisdiction. So if you were to acquire property outside, you would be paying the county additional money for property tax on that. And I'm sure there are other consequences that we would make sure you are aware of before council decided whether or not to exercise an option to purchase property.
All right. Well, I guess we will deal with that if it should become an issue. Council member?
Sorry, I just had a couple more questions. And I'm sure the consultant will probably knows how to handle this since they do a lot of work in the area. In fact, I know this particular group did the Coral Casino update, so they're very familiar with the area. But with the new changes in the building code, how does that affect the refurbishment of a very old building?
Actually, if you're a building that is deemed historic,
right,
you can utilize, instead of using the current, you know, the current building code, you have the opportunity of using the historic building code as long as you can meet today's standards. You don't have to be. There's the building official has the flexibility of providing a way of meeting today's standards, but utilizing the historic building code.
Okay, I learn something every day.
All right, that's it from council? Yeah?
Right now.
All right, we do have a couple of speaker slips for this subject. Brent Muchow, am I destroying your name?
Not too bad.
All right, thank you, sir.
My name is Brent Mucho. It looks like Muchow.
Sorry.
Sounds like stucco. Mayor Farr, council members, as I said, I'm Brent Mucho. I'm a board member, a member of the Board of Trustees of the Institute for American Research, who are commonly known as the South Coast Railroad Museum, and who are the owners of the Goleta Depot. And to be very brief, we want to speak in support of the staff recommendation to you this evening. We look forward to working with the city and with the consultant as this project proceeds, and I'll leave a letter with the city clerk saying just that. That fundamentally concludes what I have to say.
All right, thank you, sir, and thank you for your efforts with the South Coast Railroad Museum. All right, we have Ken Knight next up, followed by Kyle Richards.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I just want to also thank you for initiating the Goleta Historic Preservation Ordinance. It's necessary to put some teeth into implementing city policies on historic preservation. I'm also glad to hear that from staff that the ordinance will not only concentrate on the built environment, but it will also deal with hopefully bringing consultants in to deal with heritage tree experts who will be taking a look at the historical groves and trees that surround Goleta historical properties, such as Stowe House and Sexton House and Bishop Branch, as well as the spectacular individual trees we have, such as the Witness and Sister Witness trees and the Australian Willow at the Goleta Community Center. The preservation ordinance is needed because we still don't have a separate updated urban forestry ordinance to protect historical trees. We still have the same ordinances in place that we had when we were a county, so this is going to at least help a little bit in terms of the historical trees. I also hope that any ordinance adopted also applies not only to the private sector but to the city as well, that hopefully the city will follow the same rules and procedures that we expect the private sector to when it comes to historic preservation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. And thanks for the work you do on the Sister Tree Program. All right, Mr. Richards, if you would.
Hello, Mayor, City Council. I'm here to also speak in support of this ordinance, and I appreciate all the groundwork that's been done by staff to make this happen. It's been far too long that the city has been without a historic preservation ordinance, so it's nice to see that this is moving along. Like others, I was concerned and excited. Oh, is that my time? Okay, about the opportunity to take action last year when the Barnstall El Rio Grande Station issue came up and it was donated, and I was excited to see that. I would like to know what progress is being done to continue to preserve that. And I do note that the timeline on this project, I think you had said it was 12 to 18 months, but in here I read that it was 2 years. It said it would be by June of 2018, so it seems like a long time, and I am concerned about what might happen in the meantime. I know that was a concern that was brought up, so I would like to know that things are moving quicker than that when they can. So we have a number of archaeological, historic, scenic resources in the city, so it's great to see that this is moving forward. I do appreciate that there will be an opportunity for community input. I think that's very important. I think we all have different ideas of what might constitute a historic resource. I promise I'll stop soon. And it's great to see that there's an opportunity for the community to engage in this as well. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. City Attorney, if you would, can you give us the latest update on the Barnstall gas station?
We have some draft documents from the property owner's legal counsel, who is outside of the area, and that they have provided to us for us to review, both from a legal and a technical standpoint, make sure that the legal descriptions are correct, and make sure that they meet our needs. And they're from, as I say, from out of state, so they're not familiar with the Subdivision Map Act and some of the other issues that we need to comply with. But we do have those in hand now, and we are reviewing those.
All right. If I might ask the proverbial question here, when do you think we might consolidate this?
I can tell you that we have the documents in hand and we're reviewing them. You're asking me to speculate on other people that, besides the city, that when they will be able to take action, and I haven't had conversations with them. I don't know when it'll be back in their hand. I wouldn't expect long, but that's there are other parties at play that I've not talked with, so I can't answer that.
We've been hanging around politicians too long.
Yes,
All right, very good. Councilmember Aceves.
Thank you. I just wanted to speak to that because, as you know, I've been working on this since 2009, but Mr. Warner does intend to gift this item to the city, but a lot of work has to, had to be done before Mr. Giles received those documents, so that included a survey of the property, because the Barnsdale property is incorporated with the golf course. So there had to be a lot split, there had to be appraisals done, and then the proper documents for that Mr. Giles mentioned to had to be prepared so the city can review it from our side and then proceed with the process of receiving the gift from Mr. Ty Warner. With regards to the building itself, it is being maintained by the golf staff. In fact, when we had those, we did have some rain, they went out and made sure that everything was protected. So, and it is fenced off so nobody can get there. But this has been a long process, one that required a lot of work from a lot of different people. So now that Mr. Giles has the documents, we can move forward to bring it to council.
All right, so it's still hanging, but we are working on that diligently. Hopefully it will be consummated soon. And I know Tom Adunio, we've all received Tom's his contributions to goading us, as it were, on the Barnsdale station. Of course, our hands are tied until that does come into our purview. Councilmember Perotti.
Mr. Giles, if I understand you correctly, and first of all, Councilmember Seves, I hadn't heard any of what you just told us. I've been asking about Barnsdale for quite a while, and that information is brand new to me. But Mr. Giles, are we, once we receive the deed, can we start looking at getting in there and seeing what it needs and start working in that direction, or do we need to wait for the ordinance to pass? What's the connection there with those
no,
two?
No, I think that's the question that the mayor asked of staff earlier. The ordinance would be helpful and would provide guidance, but certainly with regard to either acquiring property or any preservation efforts that the city council wishes to partake in any specific instance would be within the council's discretion. There would not be a requirement that you wait until the ordinance is done before any preservation efforts were undertaken or any evaluation were taken. That would be something that the council could authorize us to look at this as a specific instance and move it ahead and not wait for any value that we might have by this large process that we're talking about that would give us an overall perspective. So if we didn't want to, you know, wait and get the value of that and move ahead independently, if that's the direction council wanted to do, you would be able to do that once you own the property.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to thank staff for their great report. I'm really glad that we're moving forward on this. This is something that I've been particularly interested in. And I do have to say I was shocked at how much it's going to cost. That's all I have to say. I thought that was a very large number. But that's what we have to do to get this moving along. That's what I guess we have to do.
We actually did some preliminary GIS research to take the price down from the original submittal. Mm-hmm. So by about $40,000.
Well, I would assume also we could spend some money now or we could spend a lot more fighting it in court. So it's money well spent.
Yeah, if I could. The information I gave out a few minutes ago is information that I received today.
Today?
Yes, because I wanted to be able to respond because I knew the questions are going to be asked. And this isn't an easy process. It's not as easy as giving somebody a piece of property sit here. Because there's tax consequences, there's appraisals that have to be done, there's surveys that have to be done. And so it's not an easy process, but it's one that's almost done to the point that we can receive the property. And I have a question for staff because I think there's a lot of misinformation on some of the emails we're receiving. As I remember when we went through converting the municipal code, the county had a portion on historic preservation. But if I remember correctly, all it said was
you shall create an historic landmarks commission. There was no meat and potatoes in there on how to do it. Am I right on that?
That's what we recall, but I believe there were some questions about how it transferred over as well. But yes, you're right. The meat and potatoes were not there.
And so it really had no applicability to us, because at that time, council had no desire to make an historic landmarks commission, as I remember. And what we heard from previous staff and current staff was that this ordinance would be developed closer to the final process of creating our zoning ordinance. So we've all been waiting for this to come together. But there was misinformation out there as far as we can just take what the county did, approve it, and move forward, when there really wasn't an ordinance other than the one saying you shall create a historical landmarks commission. I remember that. It was 2009, I believe. All right, thank you.
Have we ever exercised eminent domain on anything?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Roadway?
Lots of roadway acquisitions in the time that I've been here.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I think if everybody had their opportunity to speak on this issue here on the council.
I'd be happy to make a motion.
If you would, Council Member Perotti.
Approve and authorize the city manager to execute an agreement for professional services, Attachment 1, with Historic Resources Group, HRG, to assist staff with developing a historic preservation program, which includes preparation of any ordinance and associated tasks in an amount not to exceed $135,000 with an expiration date of June 30th, 2018, and B, approve an allocation of $50,000 for additional contract staff support costs to assist with the project.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? It's unanimous in favor. Let's take a few minutes. I want to apologize for this tubercular cough that I can't get rid of here. If we don't make it to tomorrow, you'll know who to blame. Take 10 minutes if you would.
Just two crazy people together. Oh, how we love sequestering, where no pests are pestering, no dear mama holds us in tether. Mosquitoes here won't bite you, dear. I let them sting me on the finger. We could find no cleaner retreat from life's machinery than our mountain greenery home. In our mountain greenery, where God paints the scenery, in our mountain greenery home.
Whether you are here or yonder, whether you are false or true, whether you remain or wander, I am growing fonder of you. Even though your friends forsake you, even though you don't succeed, wouldn't I be glad to take you, give you the break you need more than
adjourn here on our evening agenda at the Goleta City Council. Let me thank our city clerk, Deborah Lopez, for all of these throat lozenges, and she's got a home remedy of drinking hot water. So if I start to cough again, blame her, because I've got all the remedies right here. So, all right, I think we are moving on here to something that hopefully will be enlightening for all of us. Rosemary Gaglione, our Public Works Director, and Teresa Lopes, Senior Project Engineer. Madam Clerk, if you would read the subject matter here.
Item E2, authorization to advertise for bids and amendment number 1 to the professional services agreement with Drake Hagelin Associates, Inc. for the Hollister Avenue Class 1 bike path.
Don't weigh on formalities here. Just jump in with both feet.
Okay. Mayor Farr, members of the council, we took to heart everything that you had to say last time in the public, and we've worked really hard to analyze a variety of options. We reached out to the designer of the El Colegio bike path to get his input as well. We met with members of the Bike Coalition and Coast to re-engage them on the project. And you're going to see that as we go through here. But I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Teresa Lopes to begin the presentation.
Okay. I'm going to jump right in. So since the last meeting that we presented to council, things that have happened since that time. So as Ms. Gaglione specified, that we worked with a variety of traffic engineers and design consulting engineers, and looking at these intersection crossings, we reached out to them for their input or their insight on the situation, and then in turn they also reached out to their colleagues to get any advice or to get any input. So it's the situation has spread far and wide in the engineering community when looking at these crossings. We also met with the advocacy groups, Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition, and with COAST to discuss issues and design options associated with the intersection crossings. And one of the members from COAST who was at the meeting is a resident of the Elwood area, as am I. So there was two locals there looking at these situations. And also we engaged Stantec design engineers, who one of their engineers was the designer of the El Colegio Road bend-out design there in Isla Vista. So he was able to add some interesting information and some insight on why they did what they did at El Colegio. And to kind of define that a little bit, it was they put the bend out in at that location because of the high volume of bicyclists that go through there, and they needed to separate all those bicycle moves away from the signalized intersection. So that's why you have the bend out at that location. Okay. So we went back and analyzed alternatives to achieve stopping site distance and to provide visibility for all users at the intersection crossings. We wanted to look at options to make the crossing point as clear as possible and to provide clear sight lines so that all parties can see each other clearly and with enough time to take action if somebody needed to stop. And then this slide shows, I know the question came up, we didn't define what stopping site distance was very well. So I included this slide, and I'm just going to go ahead and read that definition. Stopping site distance is one of the several types of site distance used in roadway design. It is a near worst case distance, which means like the shortest or the minimum distance possible a vehicle driver needs to be able to see in order to have room to stop before colliding with something in the roadway, such as a pedestrian in a crosswalk, a stopped vehicle, or road debris. And this figure also shows the typical sight lines that you need when you're at an intersection, and that's what those grayed out triangles are, looking from the view of the person who's on the side street and is about to enter, make a turn onto the major roadway. One thing that came up at the last meeting, there was a great deal of concern that was expressed with the timing of the construction and a desire to delay the start of construction to next spring summer so that it would coincide with the summer break at Elwood School. So we went to Caltrans and we discussed options, asked them, are there any options for delaying the project construction to spring of 2017? And we followed up, we submitted a request for a time extension for local ATP projects to Caltrans to extend the construction award date from September to April of next year. And this request will go to the CTC at their next meeting, which is in August, the 17th and the 18th. And until we find out whether or not the CTC will grant us that time extension, we're going to go forward with bid advertisement as scheduled currently.
So just to elaborate, what would happen is we would end up pulling the bid before opening if we did get that extension, if we were able to do that. We have to be prepared for that not to happen, and we'll probably have to go down and plead our case. And the reason we say the 17th or the 18th is they usually meet for 2 days in a row, and we won't know until the agenda comes out which day we would be on.
Okay, now I'd like to point out some of the benefits of this project, just as a reminder of what we're doing here. So the project will create a separated 14-foot wide Class 1 bike path / multi-use path along the south side of Hollister Avenue. The path will provide sufficient space to separate user modes, meaning that bikes and pedestrians will have their own space. The project will install a landscape buffer to physically separate path users from traffic lanes on Hollister Avenue. And a separated path encourages more people, especially children, to bike by reducing the fear or stress which is typically associated with sharing street space with fast-moving vehicles. And the path will help to make bicycling fun and pleasant, hopefully. You've seen this before, this is the typical section of the final design for the project. And I wanted to point out a couple of things. So we're going to zoom in and really focus on the bike path portion, or the multi-purpose path. So you can see in the figure on the top, this is the existing condition out there on Hollister right now, where you have your 5-foot class 2 and then a 5-foot sidewalk. And in that 5 feet, you have pedestrians competing for space with bicyclists, kids on skateboards, families with strollers, etc. And in the bottom is the proposed project. And we have the 5-foot physical buffer, which separates the pedestrians and the bike path from the traffic on Hollister. Going back to a little background, I wanted to refresh the public outreach that we performed prior to beginning the design. We had 2 open house meetings at Elwood Elementary School, and these were in 2014. There were over 70 attendees. We also had individual design meetings with the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition and with MTD, and a presentation to COAST. And it was through these public outreach events that the public requested that staff look at a concept design similar to that bend out on El Colegio at the crossings for the side streets with this project. So at the time, the El Colegio bend out didn't have a name. We would just call it the El Colegio design, or the mini El Colegio design. We proposed 2 typical section alternatives, and in February, at the council meeting in February of 2014, alternative 2 was chosen as the preferred alternative.
2015.
Yeah. Oh. What did I say? 2015, sorry. And then along with alternative 2, staff was directed to analyze an alternative providing a mini El Colegio at 2 of the intersections, and that was at Palo Alto and Coronado. And we presented a graphic which showed what it may look like, but at this point it hadn't gone to design and it wasn't looked at from an engineering standpoint. So let's talk about intersection crossings and the bend out or setback crossing.
I would like to step in here one moment. Since that time, and then we're coming to now, there have been a lot of changes. I mean, the Federal Highway Administration has put out guidelines for various bicycle treatments, and Caltrans since then accepted NACTO, a lot of those guidelines, so that we could use some things that we couldn't use before. And you're seeing a lot more innovative ways of handling bicycle paths and multiple users. And so there's been a lot of things that have developed since we first started design on the project.
Okay. And to add to that, some of those guidelines, because they're new, there isn't a lot of specific design information associated with them, such as they show them in concept and they'll say, oh, setback should be from this to this. So we decided to dig a little deeper and look into designs in areas where they have been doing bend outs and get a little more information. And some of the places we looked at was the Aust Roads design guide, which is a guide from Australia, and then also Massachusetts Department of Transportation had a good planning and design guide for separated bike lanes. So the typical application of a bend out. A bend out is typically located where it is desired to give bike path users priority or the right of way over vehicles, meaning vehicles need to stop or yield to the users on the path. It's beneficial to locations where there's uncontrolled turns from a major road onto a minor side street. It's used at locations where there's a lower volume on the side streets, and also best used where the speed on the major road and the intersecting side road is less than 40 miles an hour. Crossing is delineated by a highly visible contrasting surface across the minor road, which is can be accomplished with paint. And one thing one of the guides we looked at mentioned was that it's not recommended or suitable for a shared use crossing, meaning that's a crossing where you have bikes and pedestrians mixed together. In our case, we have them separated. But when both the bikes and the pedestrians cross in the same crossing. And the reason for that is vehicle code requires that bikes can't ride through a pedestrian crossing, that they need to get off and walk their bike. And that's not really desirable to the bicyclists. They want to be able to ride across. Some of the benefits of a bend out, it gives the priority to the path users. I mentioned that again. Vehicles stop and yield to the users on the path. The path doesn't stop. Positions the bicyclists and pedestrians downstream on the side street away from the intersection, allowing vehicles to complete turning movements before interacting with the users on the path, and creates a larger yielding zone for motorists and provides space for vehicles to yield to crossing bicycles and pedestrians without blocking through traffic. Some design parameters that we found in some of the guides that were mentioned, I'm going to drive home that point again, is that the bend out gives priority to the bicycles and path users. You want to provide a 25-foot minimum setback distance from the edge of traveled way of the major street to the path crossing. You need to provide adequate visibility for all users. The bend out should be achieved with smooth curves of 100-foot radius minimum reversing curve, so that's on the bike path so that you aren't asking bicycles to make risky maneuvers trying to ride with tight curves. And another important fact is that you want to have a consistent corridor. So you want to provide the same crossing application at all the side street crossings along the length of the path to maintain driver and path user expectancy. So you want to keep things consistent. And if you're going to put a bend out at one street, you want to try to do it at all of them, especially in our case where we're going to have a number of children using this path. It's easier for them to keep things consistent as well. And then I'm just going to pull up as a reminder our one of the design that our consultant came up with originally when we were looking at the bend out at Palo Alto and Coronado, and as we talked about last time, the issues with sight distance with pedestrians in this area. So, going back and looking at these crossings, we analyzed three scenarios for trying to accommodate and provide bend outs along the project. We analyzed accommodation of a bend out at each unsignalized intersection, so extending it beyond just looking at the two at Palo Alto and Coronado, keeping the current design and staying within the existing right-of-way. We also analyzed impacts associating with providing a standard bend out with the 25-foot minimum setback distance. And we looked at the accommodation of a bend out if Hollister Avenue was reduced to one traffic lane in the eastbound direction, which would give us an additional 11 feet of width. We could pull that curb to the north and provide some more distance. And actually, that the last scenario was a suggestion which came from our advocacy group meeting. So scenario number one, can the minimum setback be achieved while staying within the existing right-of-way? We located the bendouts where required visibility could be provided between path users and vehicles along Hollister Avenue. We determined the setback distance that could be developed by locating the crossing away from the intersection while still staying within the existing right-of-way. And this scenario was considered for all the unsignalized intersection crossings, including Palo Alto Drive, Coronado, Cannon Green, and Lowell. At Santa Barbara Shores and at Pebble Beach Drive, there is no room behind the pathway. The pathway is right at the block wall, so there wasn't an opportunity to look at pulling that path any further to the south. And so we're going to go through some of the plans which show this is what that scenario looks like at the different intersections. And also calls out what the available setback distance is with this scenario. So at Palo Alto Drive, we were able to achieve 15 and a half feet. And a couple of things I'll point out. So the red lines are showing that you have the clear sight distance. It's not going to be blocked by the wall. And then this shows that with the 15 and a half feet, your car is going to be sticking out into the Class 2 bike lane. There's not enough room there for them to queue and not block the Class 2 bike lane. And then also we tighten this curve radius to about 15 feet so that a right turn would really have to slow down before turning right onto the street. And then here's Coronado. We were only able to achieve a 12-foot setback. And at Cannon Green Drive, we took a look at Cannon Green Drive, even though putting in a bend out would interfere with the ability to add a signal later, because the signal wouldn't be able to be accommodated with the bend out. But we were only able to get 10 feet setback at Cannon Green, and then at Lowell there was also 10 feet. So what we found out was that we weren't able to achieve the minimum setback distance of 25 feet at any of the intersection crossings under this scenario. And the setback distances that we were able to obtain did not provide space needed for a vehicle to queue without blocking the Class 2 bike lane. And there was some concerns with visibility for the drivers, the northbound drivers coming out of the side street, looking to the east, because that wall was still there. Scenario two, we decided, okay, what would happen if we put in a standard bend out design, one that meets the setback of 25 feet. We're going to look at putting it at each of the intersections, and we found out that in all cases, right-of-way would be required from the parcels that were fronting Hollister and adjacent on the east and west side of the side street. And then there were also some issues at Pebble Beach and Santa Barbara Shores, since this is in the coastal zone, and then there's also adjacent to Esha.
So we thought you would be interested in seeing how these would play out since we were doing all the analysis.
Okay. So here's what those scenarios would look like. The orange line that you see, this is the existing right-of-way. So you see that we're impacting the parcel and would need to take right-of-way and pulling back. And I'm just going to, in all cases, there's impact to the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. So the result of this analysis was that a total of 12 parcels would be impacted by the design. And one thing with the bend outs is when you pull that back 25 feet with pedestrians, they're going to prefer to cross at the intersection, especially people in wheelchairs who don't want to travel that extra distance to go around with the bend out. And then also the bend out design would require removal of on-street parking, not only at the bend out location, but at least 20 additional feet south of that. So then scenario number three was, can the standard setback be achieved while staying within existing right-of-way and taking one eastbound traffic lane on Hollister Avenue? Mm-hmm. So the traffic on Hollister, the eastbound Hollister would have one lane only. The design assumed that the eastbound Class 2 bike lane would remain. And then we looked at that at all the intersections as well. And what we found was that at Palo Alto, we could, by doing this scenario, we could make the setback distance. We exceeded the minimum 25-foot setback distance. But at Coronado, we could only achieve 23 feet, at Cannon Green, 21, and then at Lowell, 21. So the result of this analysis showed that even with taking one lane off Hollister, the minimum required setback distance could not be developed at 5 out of the 6 intersections looked at. Again, the construction at Cannon Green would interfere with the future installation of a traffic signal and the impact to parking. So the result of looking at all three scenarios determined that the only way to accommodate a standard bend out design at all 6 unsignalized intersection path crossings is to take right away from the adjacent parcels. And the construction of the bend out under any of the three scenarios would interfere with future installation of a traffic signal at Cannon Green. So a straight crossing and not a bent out crossing, and this is what is currently included in the design. And the benefit of the straight crossing, it remains relatively close to the major road, giving higher visibility for road and path users. It's a good option when path volumes do not require that the path users have right-of-way priority over the vehicles. It's a good use where space for bend-out crossings is not available. And the bicycle path section of the crossing should be delineated with contrasting surface marking and marked separate of the pedestrian crossing. So you'd see two crossings, one for the bike path, one for pedestrians. And you want to make the crossing as visible as possible. And this figure kind of shows that scenario where you have two crossings, and the bike path crossing is clearly marked and the pedestrian crossing.
In our case, though, the pedestrian crosswalk would be closer to the street and the bike path crossing would be farthest from the street.
Yes. Here's another sample. This is an intersection in Davis where it just to show that it has the two
the two different marked crossings. And one thing that we're looking at for our design is using a product which is called Duratherm, where you can achieve this pattern crossing. And then we can use green for the bike path, put in the bike symbols, and use either a brick color or white color for pedestrians.
And those tend to hold their color really well, so they stay highly visible.
It's actually inlaid into the asphalt. And I know that was long, but now we can go to questions.
Does council have any questions or comments? Tony, if you would, Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Just, I was writing down questions as we went, and then you did a great job of answering them as you went along, so I don't have too many. I'm assuming we can come up with some creative, not creative, but a lot of signage, on, especially on Hollister, warning people, you know, slow down for these intersections, you know, even a flashing, not like a hawk or anything, but some kind of flashing kind of, get your attention, slow down, there's going to be, you know, you can't just whip around on this right turn. I mean, obviously, that's not the sign, but I'll trust you guys to phrase that better. But we can do something like that to give it as much warning as possible to look out for pedestrians and bicyclists, right?
Yeah, and that's where we want to have another meeting with the advocacy groups and bringing in Derek Rapp, who that's the engineer from Stantec who designed the El Colegio before those things had a name. Mm-hmm. To just look at anything and everything that are legitimate markings and signage and lighting, anything that we can add to this to make it even more visible.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any questions, Councilmember Bennett?
My question is twofold. What's the possibility of reducing the speed limit, which is currently 45? And does that have any effect on the radiuses that are necessary because of the high speed?
Reducing speed limits have always been a problem because of the prevailing speed law. And that's the issue that we run into. This, you go out and you take speed measurements and on 100 cars, and the fastest that the 85th and below car go becomes your speed limit. And we have a little bit of wiggle room on that 5 miles an hour. We can pull the last speed survey and see if it was at 43 versus, say, 47, 48. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of control over the speed limit. One thing you can do, although I don't know the answer really quick to the sight distance and how much 5 miles an hour would make a difference, but we would hope that as we add these other treatments and the road feels narrower instead of like a runway, that people will slow down. And if they slow down enough and we take a new speed survey, we can reduce the speed limit based on what the prevailing speed is.
Well, I have another question. Since you went to the trouble, which is great, to look at a single lane going eastbound, what if there was a single lane going westbound in such a way where you would have the ability to make right turns into the driveways for the Citrix property, which is across the Class 2 bikeway? I recognize that, mm-hmm. But we have that throughout our city. And with that additional space, because I believe the bikeway going westbound would have to be probably 6 feet wide instead of 5, and the traffic lanes are both 11, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so you would eliminate one, so that would give you 10 more feet to play with to move everything north. Now, I'm just throwing that out there because you wouldn't have to obtain any more right of way. The additional 10 feet would seem, based on the setback distances that you quoted for all the five streets that will not meet it, even on a single lane, removal, it would seem that it could potentially meet it if you added another 10 feet to each of those.
We didn't look at whether or not another 10 feet would change that. We still would need, and we'll go back and look, but that right turn lane, I don't know that just having the Class 2 would be good enough based on the queuing, and that's what we would have to look at. So what, that was one of the big complaints we had when we first threw out the idea of could we do a two-lane Hollister. And those right turns, people were not really thrilled with losing that lane there. We can look and see what the queuing is. And we could have Drake Hagelin probably very quickly turn that around for us. You start to get, you're also building something bigger and bigger out into the street, and we'll have to see what the costs are related to that. So now you have, how does that work? We can have them sketch that out, see if it pencils out.
Well, it just seems like you've given us such additional review that is much appreciated. But it would seem that one additional review would kind of put it all to bed, so that those that have made that proposal, and we have constituents in our community that have made that proposal to make it a single lane either direction, and what I've heard generally is not going down to Cannon Green for that would be that those single lanes would only occur west of Entrance Road and wouldn't involve Lowell Way, and it would not involve Cannon Green, just as an example. But that's just been mere suggestions that I've taken and listened to. So that would be my request, because, as I say, there's been such a good job done and analyzing all the questions that were raised the last time by us and the public. And I think that's been pretty thorough, but there's just that one last component that hasn't been looked at. And then it would seem to me that if you're dealing with single lanes in either direction, you could then do a traffic survey after they were reduced. And I don't think people will be tooting along there at 45 or 50 miles an hour. My guess would be, because the natural human reaction tends to be to reduce speed in a narrow environment, so that we can get the speed along that roadway reduced legally and go from there. But those are my recommendations.
We will look at that. We will also have to take into account what the traffic counts will look like when the overcrossing goes in, because those should increase in that area.
And that's proposed to come out at this point at Entrance Road. So
yes,
that would seem to me that would work compatible, be compatible, putting those two components together.
Okay, very clever, Councilmember Bennett. Now, Councilmember Perotti would like a word here.
Well, first, I'd like to thank you, Mayor. Thank staff for coming back with this and doing a really good job looking into this further. I appreciate it. Councilmember Bennett, I think that's kind of brilliant. I like your idea for many reasons. Well, first of all, my question, so I won't go into comments, but my question wasn't, and I think you said this and I may have missed it, but originally when we were looking at this design a long time ago, wasn't there the thought of reducing it to two lanes? And then there was such a cry from the community that we kind of got rid of that idea.
That's correct.
Yeah. So the reason I would like to look into it as well is that if we can get cars to slow down, that's the whole idea that when we, the city, and several of us lobbied for school zones reducing the speed was Elwood School. If we could reduce the speed before they get to Elwood School, it's only going to be beneficial to that, because they're flying down that street. They're not going 45. They're going faster. And then they hit all of a sudden the flashing light that says they should go 25. By that time, they've already blown through that intersection or that area. So, that's why we have a motorcycle deputy that sits out there and as often as he can to kind of encourage people to slow down in front of the school. But that was the original. When we looked at the 15-mile-per-hour speed limit and working with our legislators, that was the school that we had in mind. Mm-hmm. And that was the school that we couldn't do it because of the restrictions on that piece of legislation. So I think this is worth looking into. And it seems like it's pretty built out in there already. So the numbers, I don't think the traffic counts are going to change too much. I mean, what else can we build there? So I don't think it's going to, the volume of traffic is going to increase in that particular area. That's just my thought. But thank you.
All right, we have some public comment here. Eve Sanford, Kevin Barthel, followed by Barry Remus.
Is it on? I don't think it is. Is it?
It's not on.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
It sounds different. good evening, Mayor and Council members of Goleta. I want to start off, first of all, introduction. I'm Eve Sanford, speaking on behalf of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition. I want to thank you guys for returning to this item and just looking and diving a little deeper into the details on this project, because there's a lot of potential here to serve the students and to build you know, a really great bikeway. And I'm really excited about this project. I think we can't praise enough that it separates the bicyclists from the faster moving traffic on Hollister. And overarchingly, as great as the bendout design would be, I think just providing that separate facility that feels safer for students is wonderful. And not just students, but, you know, riders of all ages and all ability levels. I want to thank city staff, myself, and Ed France, and Eva Inbar, and Doris from the Goleta Valley Cycling Club. All got to meet, and we discussed a number of design options and, you know, what was flexible and what isn't. We looked at the bend outs and how far, you know, how much flexibility we have around moving those to either side, reducing the curb radius, which I think has a lot of potential to slow cars as they make that turning movement, and then we also talked about the lane reduction or reconfiguring the road and how much flexibility that would give us. So it's exciting to see those options explored, and I hope that we'll continue to look into that. And ultimately, I think it's important that we keep up this work, because we hold students' lives in the highest regard, and we want to make sure that they're safe as they're traveling on this path. And specifically with the bend-out design, I don't think our goal was to necessarily give them right-of-way as much as just to increase visibility around there. But yeah, so in conclusion, thank you so much for your attention to this issue, and I'm excited to sort of see where this design goes and to find out that we have a little flexibility, and that with our combined brain power, you know, we're going to make sure this gets done right. Thank you.
Wait, if I might ask you a question.
Yeah.
You folks did a very successful bicycle or bike light giveaway at the community center a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so we do a yearly bicycle light distribution called Illuminando.
Yeah.
And we do that every year, actually, usually around daylight savings time in the fall. Yeah.
Okay, well, I was thinking about this big bike path here with all those munchkins rolling down there, and the old strokers, maybe like myself, walking along with a cane out on the other side there, with nothing separating them. And I was wondering if you might get the little bell that little kids put on their bikes and have some giveaway at old school, you know, so they could warn the pedestrians that they're coming up on them at 15 miles an hour.
Yeah. Should I give a comment on that? I think that's a good idea. Certainly, when this path is to open up, I think it would be a great opportunity for Coast and SB Bike to partner and do an education event at the school. And we could even talk about, you know, when you're sharing a path, just etiquette and slowing down around people who are walking and people with dogs, and, you know, giving them a little more space, and maybe even look into bells for the students, because I know that's a really useful tool to have.
Well, if bells won't work, you could use air horns.
They have those.
All right.
But I worry about kids with them.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much.
Thank you.
Kevin Barthel, please.
All right. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm not going to be so nice. I'm here to say that this council, city council, and staff, you've been consistently voting to sell and trade the Goodlands quality of life for capital, for revenue, for TOT money. One thing after another. We're losing the quality of life capital in Goleta. Things are starting to add up here. Mountain views are now being blocked by the Hilton Garden Inn. Leave no open space and no mountain views behind, Orange County style developing. You guys have got to slow down and stop and think about what you're doing and stop being so damn sloppy. Stop promoting so much development. Think about it. Think about what you're doing to the quality of life in Goleta. Having Public Works mislead you on several projects right now, including this bike path, is out downright sad. And I'll give you a good example. The traffic light at Cannon Green is in the plan in on your website today, saying it's going to be on there. It's on the website, on the info page. It'll be a traffic light at Cannon Green because of this project. Well, guess what? It's not there. The other one that I think is a horrible mislead was when this city council or this planning department got up and said there'll be no overhead utility poles along Hollister in front of West Star. What are those two huge structures for? The one on the west side, I understand, because that one needs to connect to the west. But the one on the other side, that should all have been underground. Mr. Aceves approved that project based on everything being underground along Hollister. And then you put this huge pole up there. Why? And I hope that if you approve any more development in that West Star, that you'll put that, force them to put that underground, because we don't need that in our face. I'll probably run out of time, but what I say is stop painting the streets green. That is a psychological barrier that is not a physical barrier. That doesn't help the bike riders. I Googled it, and I found out that is the case, that it's an old-style design. It's a cheap way of trying to get a psychological barrier. Make it a real barrier. What you're actually doing here is putting the people in the existing bike path even closer to the cars. I support having a nice path for the kids, but does it have to be 13 feet wide? A 10-foot wide would probably be more than adequate. I live in that neighborhood. Going the one lane at this state in the game would be way too much, because you remember the opposition we had. I live in that neighborhood, and if you had one lane coming, there'd be a stack of cars on Coronado every street in the morning trying to come out. That's a dumb idea. You did that up north here, and this is what I came on. They wouldn't let me put the pictures up, but I think you've all seen these before. But this is what happens when you design. Okay, this is what happens when you design a single lane with no, too skinny on both sides, and you can see pictures of the cars. Every fourth or fifth car is in the bike lane. And you guys all got copied on this a year ago. And Rosemary sent me a letter back explaining why it was okay. She even admitted that maybe we'll look into some things, but I don't see that's ever happened. And I'm concerned that the same people who designed that crappy road, the same people are doing it again on Hollister. And you guys need to slow down. Let this money go. Get an extension on it, but figure it out. Don't be forced. Don't be forced to approve this just because there's money on the table. You guys have built enough in Goleta that you can afford to pass this up and do it right. Okay, that's what I got to say. Thanks.
Well, that wasn't your typical public comment. So, we have Barry Remus now, if you would.
Good evening, Sir Mayor and council members. My name is Barry Remus, and I am with COAST, Safe Routes to School, and as the regional Safe Routes to School coordinator, along with the Bike Coalition, as well as definite partners of ours, we wholeheartedly encourage whatever it takes to optimize the safety of this design, and if it need be, delaying the construction as you've put the request in with Caltrans and the CTC. We believe that in the long run, for the safety of students, children, families, residents, and all road users, be they in a motor vehicle or not, that the optimal safety will be really take us as far as we can go for the long haul. We, along with the Bike Coalition, certainly offer our support for education at schools, leading bike rides, as Ms. Gaglione had previously suggested. Supplying bells and lights is really nice, and COAST and the Bike Coalition have access to those. We also want to point out that there is, as part of the alternatives for the design, and we also wholeheartedly support the application of the stamped concrete, that the treatment of the embedded paint within the treatments. Where I'm from in New Haven, Connecticut, they recently installed green lanes throughout the city with that type of an application. It's been very successful there. And also considering the aspect of keeping people separated from the flow of traffic, the landscaped buffer, we also would want to push to say, however, that can be augmented. Consider the use of increasing the buffers, bollards, et cetera, also along the Hollister Avenue near San Marcos High School. The county of Santa Barbara, County of Santa Barbara Public Works recently, you know, increased the safety of the bike lane there by actually putting in what they call like a chevron mark in between the travel lane and the bike lane. So that also could be some things that could be considered as well. So again, we support and we applaud you for taking the extra time to be able to relook at this design to optimize the safety for all the road users involved. And we thank you for your time.
Okay. All right, and thank you for your comment. Does someone else, anybody else have something to say after we've had input from our constituents?
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, please. Okay. Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I would like to ask staff, before we start to deliberate, that you're going to ask for a delay from Caltrans, but you need to go forward because the process will terminate in September as it stands right now.
That's correct.
Okay. So explain to me again, because I don't think I understood. So how do you pull back an award of contract if they come up and they say, yeah, we can delay this till next spring? Then how do we do that? What's the mechanism?
We wouldn't actually be pulling back an award. We would be stopping the process before. And any bids that were, we would return bids unopened we would have to say if it goes to the CTC on August 17th, we'd be looking at, say, August 20th for a bid opening.
Gotcha.
So we would not even open those up.
That's the part I didn't understand. So thank you. That clarifies it very simply. Thank you.
All right. If I might, I feel I need to say something for the boys in spandex that are flying down the class two there. Did you think about moving that landscaping just a little further to the north, I guess it is, and protecting the class two bikers and make it class one for the bikers?
In speaking with the Bike Coalition folks, I mean, if you combine them, the road warriors kind of lose that ability to just go along and be part of a vehicle in the roadway, and then you're mixing them with the kids, and they're going a lot faster, and then they have to, at least unless there's a bend out, they have to stop, you know. We also need space for a vehicle to pull over if it breaks down, and that's one of the reasons we couldn't remove a lane and take out the class two bike lane to try to make the bend not work, because if a car breaks down, you've got nowhere to go. You have no shoulder. So it's to do that sort of separation on both sides, I don't think we'd be able to find space to do all of that.
So assuming I'm back on my bike here and I'm cruising down that road, if someone breaks down, they're going to pull over and run up my backside?
Well, they're not supposed to run up your backside. But, I mean, if they really break down and there's no one in the bike path, at least they can get out of the way and let cars go around. Then you're going to have a case where a car that wants to go around that broken-down car may go into the two-way left turn lane a little, but they can get around. If they have nowhere to go, now they're in the lane, and now you have cars starting to back out, or everybody's got to be driving through the two-way left turn lane, which can create a bad situation. And then, once again, you know, you're looking then for more space to try to find that barrier between the class two and the road, and then you...
Well, I don't suppose it would disturb you much if I told you hurt my feelings about this. It
disturbs me greatly, actually. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I want to try to make you all happy.
Well, you know,
possibly.
I mean, I used to cruise down there when there was no protection. I will continue to do it, Mr. Bartholomew pointed out there, we've actually put them closer to the danger, you know, the class two. So, and that's something to think about.
We'll look to see if there's anything additionally that we can do, and maybe what the minimum on that landscape buffer, if there's anything that can be reduced on that, Teresa.
We could look at some areas where it's actually greater than 5 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, well, personally, it's not so much the width of a thing that disturbs me. It's, I think I mentioned last time, whenever you hear a car come out behind you, the warm water's not working. When you hear someone coming up behind you, you don't know whether they're going to kill you or not, so... That's why I'm all for class ones whenever they can be arranged. But anyway, I'm not going to beat this to death. You've obviously put a lot more work into it, and I very much appreciate your attempts to get this where we can all be happy with it. So anybody else? Yeah, Council Member Seves.
I actually just had a couple questions. you mentioned earlier that we set the speed at the 85 percentile. So we go out there and take the radar gun, and we survey 100 cars that come through. And the 85th percentile is where we legally have to set the speed limit at. So that means 15% are going over the speed limit. Do we know what the speed limit is for Hollister and Cathedral Oaks beyond the school? Do we have any idea what the speed, I know we posted 15 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in front of the school zone. But prior to that and after that, do we have an idea what the speed is?
We do. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we have all of that information.
Do we know what the speed is beyond where it now goes to two lanes? I mean, the four lanes?
Are you saying east of the school or west of the school?
I'll talk now east of the school, going towards Stork.
I think it's around 50 miles. There's places where it could be as high as 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the concern when you narrow the roadways, when you go from four lanes to two lanes, first of all, do you know what the average daily trip is for those sections? Because as you narrow, basically you're now funneling. You're not changing the amount of cars that are going through. You're just not giving enough room to get to where they're going, and then you got the cars that are making the right turns out of there. So do we know how many cars go through there? No, I got whatever you got.
Council Member Seves, we do have those numbers. What's that? So existing from Entrance Drive, Entrance Drive in Pacific Oaks, there's 12,710 cars a day. Now, our threshold in the general plan for a lane, to have only one lane, is 14,300. So we're, you know, I mean, depending on how things change in the future, it could be close. But it's not just the number of cars. We have to look at the turning movement. So where you have a lot of right turns, you may say, hey, this should work. But, yeah, you've got things stacked. You minimize or you reduce the amount of gaps that people have on the side street to be able to get out when you put them all in one line. Because as you say, you're not reducing the number of cars, but you're putting them all in a line. And so waiting for that gap to get out of a street can become a little more difficult. So that's one of the things that we have to analyze very quickly, is not just the ADT threshold, which if it went over that, well, then council always has the option of, I guess, altering the general plan to say that on this road you want to allow a little more traffic on a single on a two-lane road. But we have to take a look at those turning movements and make sure and the gaps for the side streets to make sure it won't cause more of a problem.
Do you give me those numbers again?
12,700.
Yeah, right now, Entrance Road and Pacific Oaks Road is 12,710 cars per day.
Okay, and is there a threshold that would justify moving it to two lanes? Did you say that?
The general plan says 14,300.
So anything below 14,000
300 is acceptable in terms of just the numbers per lane. Then on top of that, we do have to look at turning movements and other things.
And that doesn't take into consideration future development, increase of traffic.
Teresa's pulling up the future.
Wow.
Could you tell me how I'm going to look in 10 years?
You don't want to know.
Excellent, I'm sure.
I would have asked for who's going to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now it looks like it would be over 18,000 cars per day.
Mm. So
be in trouble.
If you went to two lanes, we'd be pushing 18,000 cars per down two lanes.
Okay. Yes.
That's just what I need to know. Thank you.
And just as a follow-up to that, we already last time talked about Cannon Green and the challenges and the warrants that aren't there to get the stoplight, but I would imagine it gets a lot worse if we make it one lane each way, right? I mean, then that becomes a really challenging intersection to cross.
Well, yeah, every intersection, the challenges will increase as you line them up and you don't have as many, because now they're coming in a bunch, 3 and 4 and 10 mm-hmm. and whatever, and when you get it to one lane each direction, you'll have more of a line of cars.
Yeah.
And that would probably end up kicking that over into warrant for a signal, at least at that intersection, and then I don't know what else it might do in other places.
Okay.
It's the good thing though about having a model, and we pop numbers in and we're able to, we've got some software, flick some switches and add some things and see how it all comes out.
Very good. Okay.
All right. We've really expressed a lot of opinions here. I don't know whether we need to deliberate anymore. Does anybody else have a final thought on deliberation? If not, Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, if I could borrow your little red pointer there. One thing I think that's missed on this thing is that there is a curb that you see here next to the Class 2 bikeway. Then you have the swale, which is also being utilized to accept roadway water so it can be cleansed before it goes into the ocean. But notice there's a 5-foot separation between this curb and where someone's walking, and it looks like they're walking with a cane. If you go up to the existing circumstance, here's your curb, and the person walking with the cane is adjacent to the Class 2 bicycle lane. So the fact of the matter is, the Class 2 bicycle lane under the proposal is separated from that walking pedestrian by 5 feet that doesn't exist today. And there is still the curb, which is true in all of our streets. We all have curb gutter for most every place, and where the bicyclists go. So it's the same difference as the existing up here. The only improvement is that the pedestrian now is separated 5 feet more, not only from the Class 2 bike lane, but from any other interaction that the vehicle may take. So I just wanted to make that clarification, since I hear different things, and this is the way it is as proposed. This is the way it is as it is today, which is much closer and certainly much more dangerous.
Yeah, Councilmember Perotti.
I just want to comment on a couple things. Are we going to comments now? Is that okay?
Or this is part of your delivery.
Okay. The problem with what's happening now with the kids that are riding on the sidewalk on their bikes, they're being told when law enforcement goes and has demonstrations at the school, at Elwood School, they're told they're not supposed to ride on the sidewalk. So no, they're not being told that. That's what they had been. I know that they won't give you a ticket if you ride, but I heard that they were having conflict because legally you can't say you can ride on the sidewalk when it's against the law. But if I'm mistaken, I'm looking at our resource, Senior Deputy Valadez, and he's shaking his head no.
We actually instruct them
come
to
up to.
Can you come up to the mic, please? Because I really like to know if they're saying something different now than they had been.
I'm not sure about the past, but Senior Deputy Jeff Farmer and I are doing education around the schools, and we instruct them to ride on the sidewalk.
Okay, thank you.
Per the vehicle code, there is a sidewalk section that addresses that.
And I think that's where the confusion was coming for years before this, mm-hmm. when they were told, well, we can't legally tell you to ride on this sidewalk, mm-hmm. but they wouldn't give a ticket. Mm-hmm. So there are some kids, there have been in the past, that will ride going the wrong way, but on the street in the bike lane. They're not on the...
Well, all infractions are, like, per the vehicle code, you have infractions, you have misdemeanors, et cetera. And infractions are always at the discretion of the officer. So that's why you, as you stated, deputies and police officers will likely not cite when they see
right.
that.
Right.
They have that kind of mandate afforded to them. But as far as educating children being that small, we recommend that they ride on the sidewalk.
Well, that's good to hear, because mm-hmm. I know in the past that wasn't happening. So thank you for that. Well, that takes care of that confusion with them. But where now that they can be on the sidewalk, and it needs to be 14 feet, because 10 feet is just too small. It's just too, it's not going to work for bicyclists and pedestrians and mothers with strollers. So that's why they came up with the 14 feet.
All right. Any other comments here? No, I think we've pretty much flogged this. I've certainly had my say. I don't think anybody was listening about the poor guys in the Class 2 bike lane, but why don't we have a motion on this?
I'll make one.
Okay.
And I'm so glad that we don't give our kids tickets for riding their bicycles on the sidewalk. The law allows you to do that unless it's specifically posted. You cannot ride on the sidewalk like downtown State Street. They don't want bicycles on the sidewalk.
That would make sense, yeah.
But if it was my kid, I'd tell him to ride on the sidewalk. Okay. I would move that we authorize staff to advertise a notice inviting bids for the Hollister Class 1 Bike Path Project and authorize the city manager to execute Amendment Number 1 to the Professional Design Services Agreement with Drake Hagelin and Associates. For design services to complete final design for the Hollister Class 1 Bike Path Project, increasing the agreement by $183,229 for a total not to exceed contract in the amount of $212,229.
Second.
And there's an and I don't know why there's an and. Was there something else supposed to be there?
No. Typo?
That was a mistake.
Okay. So there's no and. That's my motion.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gagliani and Ms. Lopes. We appreciate you coming back and working on it so diligently. So.
Are you ready for council comments?
I think we are. Do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
As far as the committees, the solid waste, we dealt with that today. Public safety, we dealt with that today. So I don't really have a report on that unless Councilmember Bennett wants to add something to it.
I do not.
But okay, so we're done with that.
Second.
I do want to take the time to recognize all the first responders that responded to the fire and kept our community safe. At what point the warning extended to Stork and Hollister and Glen Ann Cathedral Oaks. So everything west of there was in the advisory, but not evacuation. I did go to the first press conference, and I got to tell you, I've never seen a more impressive press conference than all the ones they've handled here. They were organized, they were succinct. They answered all the questions, and there was a lot of media there. So I didn't go to anyone after that. I watched it on television because they were so well organized. But these men and women did a hell of a job in fighting a fire that potentially could have been more disastrous than it had been, because, as I understand it, this area hadn't burned for 50, 60 years. And with the drought, with the dead trees, I mean, everything you can, it was a perfect storm for a great fire. And the fact that they couldn't handle it, a lot of it couldn't be handled from the ground, had to be done from the air because of the makeup of the terrain. But they did a wonderful job. And I want to specifically mention Jennifer Carmen, who's our public works, our planning director. We also had a perfect storm here in that our manager and city manager, our assistant city manager, were on vacation. And all of a sudden, we got a big fire. So she was put in charge, and she did a heck of a job in keeping us informed as to what was happening. The minute the updates came out, they were sent to us directly, so that was a great help. And I just wanted to acknowledge her about the great work that she did to keep this council informed. So those are my comments. Thank you. I have nothing else to report.
All right.
Sure.
Yeah, if you would, Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Thank you. Well, I want to reiterate the thanks to all our first responders, the sheriff, the fire, everybody who did such a wonderful job keeping our community safe, and staff, including Ms. Kushneroff and Ms. Wells, who were part of the EOC team. They did a great job as well, and yet Ms. Carmen did a great job keeping us all informed because, you know, I was out of the state and was relying completely on the emails, and I really appreciated the fact that I could be kept up to date. And then, of course, Ms. Green stepped right in as soon as she got back, and must have been a fun return to immediately step into that. But you did a great job of not missing a beat and keeping us informed. So thank you both. As long as we're congratulating people, too, we can't forget our UCSB baseball team, huh? Go Gauchos. I watched that game when that freshman hit a grand slam in the top of the bottom of the ninth to send us to the College World Series. That's one of those things where he comes up and you think it would be really cool if he hit a grand slam, and then next thing you know, against the best relief pitcher in college baseball. So, and then they won again yesterday, knocked out another great program, and we're on to Wednesday's game. So, go Gauchos. I'm going to show a little bit of alumni pride and say, go Gauchos. Let's keep it up, guys. We had a Fire Station 10 meeting where we got to tour the existing station on Cathedral Oaks over there. Kyrielle, excuse me. Yes, sorry. And I thought that was really informative. It was a good way to, especially for me, Councilman Bennett has done that from the other side of the table already, so he already knew those things, but it was good for me to see what works, what doesn't work, and understand it better so we can be better prepared for the planning. So I want to thank the fire department for hosting us out there. And I had a meeting with one of our constituents who's a former employee of Delco, and his father was an employee of Delco. And, of course, Delco has a huge history with Goleta and all the great work they did for us. He was kind, and I haven't had it framed yet, so I didn't want to bring it in, but he was kind enough to give me a poster that they gave to their employees who were involved in the Lunar Rover project. So as soon as it's in the frame shop right now, as soon as I get it, I'll bring it to show everybody. But, of course, that brings me to my last point, which is tomorrow night the Chamber's hosting an event at the Cabrillo Business Park where they're going to be thanking the Delco people and honoring them. There's a memorial to the Delco employees and all the amazing things that have been developed here in Goleta. So for those of you who are free tomorrow at 5, you can come out and see a little bit about the history of Goleta and some of the amazing things that have been created here. And that's all I got.
That's not all you've got. That's what you've got. I stole that from John Wayne and Brio Bro. Okay. All right. Councilmember Perotti.
Okay. Well, I'd like to echo what my fellow colleagues have said about appreciation. So grateful for all the first responders and our staff and everyone that had anything to do with the fire. And I thought the information that we received on a regular basis was very helpful and very grateful for all the work that they did. On June 8th, the mayor and I had an energy and green issues committee meeting, and Traffic Solutions came in, and Kent Epperson, and he's developing a survey for businesses in Goleta, finding out what they're doing for their employees to give them incentives to carpool or ride the bus or walk or bike. And so he'll be coming forward with that survey soon, letting us know what other companies are doing in our area. He also talked about Traffic Solutions is looking into working with MTD to provide an express bus from Carpinteria to Goleta. He says that there's a real strong need for it. So that's something they'll be working with MTD on to see if that's a possibility. It would be funded, I believe, through Traffic Solutions.
Well, that'd be good.
Didn't I say that the funding, Michelle, Ms. Green, do you remember?
I think they mentioned a contribution, but we didn't go into details about dollars because they said they still needed
they're
to work with MTD quite a bit on that.
So MTD staff is working on that.
Okay, great. And we talked about our Earn a Bike, or if we wanted to do Earn a Bike program, or maybe an e-bike. Talked about maybe asking our new staff that's come in if that's something they'd be interested in the future. He talked about bike share in Goleta, if that's something we would like to see ourselves in, not right away, but moving in that direction like other cities have done, where you can come into town and get a bike, and I guess you put a card in and you pick up the bike and then you return it. And so that's something we haven't really looked at or talked about, but he discussed it a little bit with us. Let's see. And then we continue to have updates on and continue working with on our street light purchases and LED upgrades. So not really a whole lot to report on that other than we're continuing to work on that. Then on June 9th, we all had a workshop here, Rules of Decorum. And June 10th, I had a board meeting with Devro, and we're going to be working on our strategic board planning soon, and a couple events. We August the 20th, the same day as our dam dinner, they're going to have their Devro Day, but I think that's before we have our dam dinner, which will be August 20th. So mark your calendars, everybody. And then June 16th, many of us were at the Fiesta Ranchero.
I forgot to mention that.
I know. I can't believe you forgot. It was fabulous. I mean, it's always wonderful, but it was just really, really a good time this year. And good food and a lot of good people and fun dancing and good music. So I really had a good time this year. So that's all I really have.
All right. Councilmember Bennett.
Well, I'll start off with the... As we all attended the special meeting for the Rules of Decorum, spent about 3 hours going through that process. That was on the 9th of June. I also attended an unveiling of a draft proposed media outreach for Ivy Save. And there's been a number of changes to it. You'll see in the fall a new approach to going forward in the Ivy community moving forward in the positive culture nature of IV and taking pride in their community and with a great deal of participation from those in IV. And so I'm very optimistic this will go forward and be well received. And I think it's going to be a great vehicle to promote the pride in IV and continue to move forward as we have already with Halloween and with Deltopia, which we've had great results. So we're going to continue on with that. But as I say, it'll be a new program. You'll see a different approach. And I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to work out really, really well. Moving right along, I did attend the Fire Station 10 meeting at Fire Station 12 on Cal Real. And it was a great opportunity to see the things that those that are assigned at that facility like and those things they didn't like quite so much or didn't work out quite so well. Mm-hmm. So that way when the new station goes forward, we can try to do the best things and incorporate those into that particular design. So I did learn some things too. I got a few little nuggets out of that. So I by no means know it all when it comes to the firehouse or hear the feedback from the troops as to what they think in regards to all of that. And I attended my CAC Finance Committee meeting to the CAC committee that I'm appointed to by council. And had my SB CAG meeting on Thursday the 16th. and also APCD on that prior to, and then talking about La Patera Ranch on the, which I thank you for supporting me and proposing the fire line to be put in through the ranch. So I worked with staff and so they could better understand what my thought process was on that particular proposal. And then I took off and attended Fiesta Ranchera with all the rest of you. And when
almost
all, we were all together there. So that was pretty exciting and that was fun. And it, of course, as we all know, it's great for our community. It's a great opportunity for people to visit and sell the positives of the city of Goleta, which I think is pretty exciting. So that concludes my report for today. Oh, excuse me. I want to ditto because I know I would take a great deal of heat from my troops if I didn't suggest or offer up the same kudos been expressed by the previous council members in regards to the great job that all of the firefighters and law enforcement and medical personnel and our own staff who took care of us with providing information and so on. Great job by all, and it's really a nice thing when it all comes together, but that's through a lot of hard work, training, and education, and this process began in the mid-1970s, and it really shows and pays off what can be accomplished when you're dealing with very complex circumstances.
Very good. Let me say the same about that. Our staff pulled itself together very professionally, handled themselves very professionally, including Ms. Carmen and Ms. Green when she got back into town. And we did, as council member Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo said, we did get an email in particular from the Office of Emergency Management, is that what it is? Singling out Valerie Kushneroff and Ann Wells in particular for their contribution to the operation. And of course, the firefighters are great. I was talking to somebody out of the area today saying we have a very professional fire team here in California. And now they're swinging down to LA to battle the stuff down there and acquitting themselves in the usual fine fashion. So anyway, that has all been quite wonderful. On the Fiesta Ranchera experience, it was quite wonderful as well. Tony Barra plays a mean guitar, I have to say. It was quite wonderful, he and his group. And Area 51, you may be pleased to know that who didn't get to see the perspective that I had over on the south side of the dance floor, the Goleta staff really shook its booty very fervently, I have to say, including our assistant city manager. She was out there having a grand time with Ms. Jeannie Wilson and others from the staff. And it was just, I'm sorry I couldn't have joined them. But anyway, it looked like everybody had a wonderful time, and I certainly did. Excuse me. And one more thing that I've been wanting to say something about here for the last couple of weeks and haven't yet done it. Mark Schneep announced the other day that the unemployment in Goleta is 2.5%. 2.5%. And as I recall, economists consider 4% full employment. So we have a phenomenal system underway here. And everybody seems to have a job that is interested in having one. So, except my kids. So... just a joke. That's kind of an inside joke. But anyway, it's something to be commended, you know, that we have a city with a crime rate and an unemployment rate that are kind of like the same, you know. Very wonderful. Anyway, that's all I had to say. I think, Ms. Green, do you have a report you'd like to make?
Yes, I do, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to remind the public and council that our next city council meeting is actually July 19th. We just have the one meeting in July. City offices will be closed on Monday, July 4th, of course, in observance of Independence Day. That's also the day that the 4th of July fireworks will be occurring at Gersh Park. And I wanted to let council know that we are keeping the prior conditions in place, and we're on track for permit issuance. And in case there's any concern about fireworks and fire safety, we are working closely with County Fire in the issuance of that permit, and we are aware of the sensitivity and the heightened awareness at this time of year, particularly with our recent events. So we are working and coordinating closely with them. If there are any concerns, none have been brought to our attention. So the only other thing I was going to add, Council Member Prody already mentioned the dam dinner on August 20th. So that's open to the public, free of charge. You can see our website for more information.
All right, Mr. Giles. All right, so as I read my schedule here, we seem to have done all the business we're going to be doing here tonight. I promise not to cough next time. So if there's no objection, I will gavel this meeting down, and the evening session of the Goleta City Council is now adjourned.